Now, in a black sky, a sliver of sunlight crests the Earth. Rays of light shoot off the continents, and a three-dimensional word orbits the planet, Universal. A web address appears, www.universalstudios.com. In another logo, our view glides across water, then up the skyline of Manhattan. The lights of the city twinkle, then dissolve into a title, Miramax Films. In another logo, a glistening droplet falls into a pitch-black pool, causing the dark water to ripple. The shimmering rings form the words, Imagine Entertainment. Titles appear. Universal Pictures, Miramax Pictures, Imagine Entertainment present. A quote, in all the history of the boxing game, you find no human interest story to compare with the life narrative of James J. Braddock, Damon Runyon. A title, Cinderella Man. Now, flecked black and white splotches suggest a nose and shadowy eyes. Another abstract fades in, showing stringy whiteness trailing from teeth and a lip. It fades out. Now our view pulls back from the image, revealing a newspaper photo of a boxer getting punched in the face. A white string of spittle flies from his mouth. The image comes to life and colorizes. As the fighter gets knocked to the canvas, a referee leans over him. The other boxer dances nimbly, his dark hair damp with sweat. He walks his rugged frame to a corner. Words appear. Tuffy Griffith versus James J. Braddock, Madison Square Garden, November 30th, 1928. As the referee raises the winner's arm, a short, bug-eyed man arches his brow, then smiles. Braddock smiles back. Outside, a bright marquee vaunts the words, Madison Square Garden.
You're gonna be the next champ, Jimmy.
Hey, how you doing?
Just give him a few, leave him watch.
You want to sign my name for me, too?
Well, at least then they can read it.
Swarmed by fans, Jim signs autographs. Now he rides in a car with the bug-eyed man.
You've been getting stronger with every fight I've been seeing.
Favor the right, sure, but you got no stage fright or nerves. And you have never been knocked out. You're in line. That's all I'm saying, Jimmy. You're gonna get your shot.
All right, let me see what we got here.
He takes out a stack of cash.
886 for Jeanette, 772 for Lou and Whitey, $1,000 for the ring fees, my 2658, and your 3544 makes $8,860. Stick that in your mattress, Irishman.
Jim kisses the cash and tucks it away.
Hey, when we get there, you gonna come and see the kids?
Oh.
It's been a while. Come on. They missed their Uncle Joey.
Yeah, that's very sweet. You still married to the same girl?
Jim looks out the window.
I was this morning.
Well, congratulations. Maybe I'll take a rain check. And will you tell her I undercharging the gym fees and no loading the town? Would you do that for me, please?
I will be sure to point
it
out.
Oh, I appreciate it. You stop up at the corner here somewhere, Frank. Home to Jersey for Mr. Adventure over here.
Later, Jim shakes hands with the driver.
All right. See you, Frank.
The car backs out of a driveway as Jim approaches a house. The front door opens and a doll-faced brunette woman appears in the doorway. As Jim approaches, he hangs his head. The woman frowns. Reaching the front steps, Jim bobs his head soberly. As the woman lowers her gaze, he breaks into a smile.
Oh, I could kill you!
She runs into his arms.
I'd like to think of that.
Jimmy?
Yeah?
My sister.
Oh. Daddy, did we win?
Jim lifts the toddler. A second woman holds a younger boy.
Hi, Alice.
Good. That's wonderful, Jimmy.
Hey,
later, the boxer sits on a patio in the night air. With an adoring smile, his wife brings two snifters of brandy and hands him one.
Thank you.
So tell me about him. Was he a real slugger? Hmm?
She sits. Jim puts down his drink.
You could come and watch.
Mm-mm. Mm-mm. No. You get hit every time. Feels like I'm getting hit, too. And I'm not half as tough as you are. So, tell me about the girls.
Girls?
Mm-hmm.
She rests her feet on his lap.
I was at the garden. There was a fight night.
Come on, there was one. There must have been one.
No.
Blonde?
Brunette.
Oh, tall?
Jim leans forward and pulls his wife closer.
Like a gazelle. Ugh. I don't know how it is she breathed up there.
Oh, Mr. Braddock. You're so strong. Oh, and your hands. They're so big. Oh, you're so powerful. Jimmy, I'm so proud of you. I'm so proud of you.
She stands over him in her silky white midi blouse.
Introducing 2-time state golden gloves title holder in both the light heavyweight and heavyweight divisions, 21-0 with 16 wins, coming by way of knockout, the Bulldog of Bergen, the Pride of New Jersey. And the hope of the Irish as the future champion of the world, James J. Braddock.
She raises his arms overhead, letting them back down. She grabs him by the collar and kisses him. Their lips still locked, Jim rises and holds her in his arms. Towering over him, she smiles as they touch noses. Jim looks around cautiously. Behind them, lights glow on a string of colorful lanterns. He carries her off into the darkness. Later, in a bedroom, Jim stands at a dresser.
Mom, you woke me up.
Well, you keep the covers off, honey.
The boxer takes off a Catholic cross necklace and drapes it over his framed wedding photo. He removes a wristwatch, then drops a stack of cash across an open jewelry box. A second wad plunks down in a money clip. On the lacquered dresser, another box sits filled with earrings, rings, and necklaces. As our view moves across the flower print wallpaper, the picture grows dark. Now our view keeps moving to a whitewashed dresser top lined with a simple lace runner. Words appear, September 25th, 1933, 4 years into the Great Depression. A man's fingers reach for a folded straight razor near the Braddock's unframed wedding photo. Jim squints at his reflection in a mirror. He runs a hand down his cheeks. He picks up a jagged, hooked strip of metal with an ivory nub angled down from one end. Wincing, he fits it into his mouth. He checks his fake tooth in a mirror, rubbing it with a forefinger. Scratching his belly through his T-shirt, he steps around a wall of exposed lath.
I can't find my socks.
Jim.
I'm sorry.
A girl sits up in bed.
Mama.
Great.
Oh, I'm sorry, baby.
I washed him last night. I took him right off your feet. Don't you remember?
His wife removes a pair of socks from an oven.
You were out like a light.
As she holds them out to the groggy boxer, he grabs her arm and pulls her in for a kiss. He touches the socks to his face.
Mm. How do I keep them this warm?
Mama, I want to eat too.
Oh, Mommy will get you some, honey.
She kisses her daughter's head as Jim puts on his shoes.
Hey, Rosie, Rosie. Good morning, good morning.
As he lifts Rosie onto his lap, his wife brings over a meat slice on a plate.
Got a notice yesterday. Electric.
Jim kisses Rosie.
Come on.
He sits her at the table.
Okay, okay. There we go. I'll get the milk.
He sets the plate in front of her. Outside, before sunrise, Jim heads upstairs to an alley. 2 empty milk bottles sit in a basket. A notice around one reads, "Past due." Jim picks it up. Wearing suspenders over his T-shirt, he grabs the bottles. Now he returns to the basement apartment. As his wife looks over from the stove, he shows her the past due notice.
Oh, Well, I think there's some left over.
Jim puts the empties on a shelf.
Yep.
He adds the notice to a stack of bills.
I got that fight tonight at the Armory.
His wife adds water to a milk bottle, only 1/8 full.
Yeah, one guy, Abe Feldman. He's $50 win or lose.
Well, that's good.
If I beat him, maybe I can get my purses back up to 75.
That would be great.
She purses her lips.
Rosie.
The girl eats with her hands.
Use your fork, please.
She stabs it into the last morsel of meat.
Who needs a cow?
The bottle's now 3/4 full.
Mama, I want some more.
Oh, I'm sorry, sweetheart. We need to save some for the boys.
As she pours a glass of milk, Jim returns to the table.
Here you go.
You know, May, I dreamed last night that I was having dinner at the Ritz with Mickey Rooney and George Raft.
Really?
Yeah. I dreamed I had a steak. Thick. Juicy steak. Oh. Like this, Rosie.
Wow.
And then I had a mountain of mashed potatoes. And I went back for ice cream 3 times.
Oh.
I'm stuffed. I'm absolutely full. I cannot eat another thing. Wanna give me a hand?
Rosie nods.
Jim.
He gives his daughter his single meat slice.
Jimmy.
As Rosie eats with her hands, her father leans over the table and kisses May. Jim grabs a coat and heads to the door. His round-faced wife smiles as she watches him go. In the early morning darkness, people stir in a parked car. As one of its doors opens, Jim crosses a dingy lot nearby where a crude tent sits near campfires. 2 children run out from the car.
Boys, hurry up. Don't dawdle. Let's try and sleep a little more.
Wearing a floppy cap, Jim warms his hands over one fire, then stuffs them in his pockets and walks off. Later, he heads down a sidewalk of dark storefronts.
Sure business is punk, and Wall Street is punk.
A grocer stacks meager produce on shelves.
And ready to broke. We've nothing to dunk, can't even get drunk.
Jim passes a person lying in an alley. Our view over his shoulder shows the gleaming sidewalk a blur. Jim lowers his head.
Though you have no shirt, happy days are here again. Cheer up, smile, nerds.
Jim crosses a wet street.
Giggle till it hurts. No more breadline charity.
After sunrise, dozens of shabby men wait outside an iron gate. On the inside, a clean-shaven foreman exits a booth with a clipboard. The men crowd closer. They reach through the bars. Jim cranes to see.
I need 9 men. And only 9.
The foreman points.
What? 2. 3, 4, 5, 6.
He meets Jim's gaze. Jake's finger points away from the boxer.
7, 8, 9. That's it. All right, let's get a move on.
Glowering, Jim turns away.
Come on, get going. Got a lot of work today.
Jim puts on his cap and steps past a dirt-smudged newspaper. A headline reads, Unemployed hits record 15 million. Now, a boy jumps on a rusty box spring mattress left out on a staircase balcony. Twirling, he sees Jim arrive in the gravelly courtyard below.
Hey, Dad.
Hey.
No shifts today, Dad.
What are you doing, son?
I'm being good. I'm being quiet. I'm being safe.
Great.
Rosie climbs out of a makeshift fort.
Daddy, Daddy.
She runs over to Jim.
Hey, Rosie Cheek. How you doing?
Daddy. Jay's store.
What?
Jay's store.
In the basement apartment, Jim's oldest son sits against a wall with his arms folded. Jim descends the stairs toward the open door, holding Rosie. He faces May.
What's all this about?
See? It's a salon.
Young lady, your brother's in enough trouble without you telling on him. You understand?
Rosie nods.
It's from the butchers. And you won't say a word about it, will you, Jay? Will you, Jay?
Facing her husband, May shakes her head. Jim glowers.
Okay, pick it up. Let's go.
Sulking, Jay stays still.
Do not test me, boy. Right now.
The boy gets up and grabs the salami off the table. Jim eyes his wife, then follows Jay to the stairs.
Howard, stay here.
The boxer musses his younger son's hair as he leaves. Now a woman exits the shop. Plucked chickens hang in the window, which frames a view of Jay handing the salami over a counter to a butcher. They speak. Jim puts his arm around his son and brings the boy outside. A sign reads, Spiegel's Meat and Poultry Shop. Another sign mounted below the window displays the Coca-Cola logo. Jim and Jay follow the busy sidewalk. The straight-haired boy looks up at his father.
Marty Johnson had to go away to Delaware to live with his uncle.
Why?
His parents didn't have enough money for them to eat.
Arm shaking, Jim glances down at him and swallows. The boxer looks around, shifting on his feet.
Yeah, well, things ain't easy at the moment, Jay. You're right. There's a lot of people worse off than what we are.
Jim leans down to his wide-eyed son, propping his hands on his knees.
And just because things ain't easy, that don't give you the excuse to take what's not yours, does it? That's stealing, right? We don't steal. No matter what happens, we don't steal. Not ever. You got me?
Jay nods, then gulps hard. Crouching below his son's eye level, Jim rubs his hands together.
Are you giving me your word?
Yes.
Go on.
I promise.
Jay purses his lips. His father nods.
And I promise you, we will never send you away.
Jim holds out his hand. Jay hugs him.
It's okay, kid. You got a little scared, I understand.
He picks up his son. Jay clings to his father, who carries him down the sidewalk, patting his back. Now sitting ringside, an official mops his brow with a crumpled necktie. Two boxers pound each other in the ring. Words appear. Mount Vernon, New York, September 25th, 1933. In a locker room, Joe tapes up Jim's left hand.
He's a very slow guy. Just plants himself there. So you just keep him steady, keep him trapped in the middle, keep dancing around him, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You know what to do, you know this type. Guy's a bum.
Jim shoots him a harsh look. It goes unnoticed by Joe.
2 bits will get a guy a seat. And that guy gets to watch you bleed and call you a bum.
Jim's face glistens with sweat.
I know I gotta take it from him because he's a paying customer.
Oh, I see. Well, 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 well. Pardon me, miss. Allow me to restate my position. Mr. Abraham Feldman is a novice fighter whose ass you should gently kick until it is humped up between his shoulder blades. That is if it doesn't offend your overly sensitive nature. God knows.
He rubs Jim's untaped right hand. Joe feels around his fighter's wrist. Jim forces a wince into a smile.
Oh. You see, that break's still a few weeks away.
I know.
Yeah. And you were going to tell me about this one.
It's going to be fine.
Oh, it's not fine. No, it's not. It's what the hell? You don't tell me? What
the hell kind of crap is that? I owe everybody money, Joe. I owe everybody money.
With a solemn look, Jim shifts his jaw.
I can't get any shifts. We ain't got any cash.
Joe stops him, then looks back down at his wrist.
I got it. Screw them, I'll tape it double.
Thanks.
Later.
Keep up. Stay up. Keep moving. Keep your legs moving.
Jim punches the air.
And here comes Braddock with his longtime manager.
You washed up, Braddock.
They approach the ring.
Hey, Jersey veteran
James J. Braddock is up against Jaime Kaplan's latest charge, young Abe Feldman from Schenectady, New York. Some might recall that Braddock was once a light heavyweight title challenger. His golden boy peak ended when Tommy Loughran handled Jim over 15 rounds back in 29. Since then, the oft-injured Braddock has shown only a glimmer of his early promise. And the losses have started to pile up. But Braddock continues to battle. And here comes the popular Abe Feldman. Feldman looks to be the real thing and showed some real moxie in his recent win over Hans Berger.
Feldman arrives and hops around the ring.
Hey, who whipped Latson?
I did.
God damn right. Who KO'd Slattery in the ninth? When everybody said he'd never rainmaker's chance in hell.
That'd have to be me, too.
Right. And we're supposed to pucker our assholes over this Abe Feldman? The guy couldn't break wind.
No.
Hey, Jimmy. Any place else you'd rather be?
No.
Good. Now, what are you going to do about it?
Later, the fighters clinch.
Here we are halfway through the fifth, and it's more of the same. The boys clinch again.
He's crushing my back, and
the ref separates them.
The Bluebirds have started flying here. They want action from these fighters. Feldman sticks a left in Braddock's face. Braddock's right hand is his best and only weapon. He'll show the left, but it lacks snap, and Feldman knows.
Give these yokels a shot in the ass!
Feldman ducks a haymaker, but fails to follow up.
Jim swings a left hook into Feldman, who then evades body blows by swiveling with his elbows tucked. Jim jabs his face.
And another big right by Braddock. Now there's the Braddock we all recall. But it's one at a time. It may not be enough.
They clinch again. With an uppercut, Jim sends Feldman into the ropes. As Feldman's head lolls forward, Jim's incoming jab connects with the boxer's crown. An X-ray view shows Jim's wrist shatter. As Joe looks away, Jim slouches with an anguished grimace. His view of the crowd blurs to milky white, then clarifies. Jim hits Feldman's ribs with a left hook. The men clinch on the ropes.
The referee pulls the boys apart, and there's the bell to end the fifth.
Easy.
Jim takes his stool. His hand twitches.
You saw that, huh? I lost it again. I'm calling it, Jim.
As Joe mops sweat off Jim's neck, the boxer shakes his head no.
You gonna use the left?
Okay, good.
You get in there. But you don't let him crouch you. You work his belly.
The ref approaches.
Last round. Come on, you got to show me something. Give me a good
one. You are giving me an ulcer, Harry.
Shut up.
Work his belly with the left. You got it? Okay. Give him the flap doodle with the right because he don't know. Right? Because he's kind of stupid. Okay? Last round. Go get it. The left.
Joe hops down next to a corner man.
Damn it, I wish he could find his goddamn left.
That's it. Change it up. Southpaw, that's it.
Feldman prancing around looking for an opening, but still few clean punches by the fighters. Braddock still pawing away with the left. Another ineffectual left from Feldman. Braddock can hardly lift his arms. He's slow on his feet. At least Gould in his corner is still throwing punches, trying to urge his man on.
They clinch again up against the ropes. In the crowd, a husky man in a fine suit glowers through wire-framed glasses. As spectators throw garbage, the ref breaks up the clinch.
Kavanaugh's working harder than the fighters.
Joe eyes the crowd. Jim sluggishly pins Feldman to the ropes.
Another clinch. It's as if 80 tough fights have finally jumped on Braddock's back.
Jim focuses on a man shouting through cupped hands, then desperately punches Feldman with his broken hand.
Pulls him apart, and he's called the fight. He's called the fight. It's a no contest. And the popcorn and the peanuts are raining down. And I'm afraid to say that's all these fighters deserve for the show they put on tonight.
The husky man in the suit leaves.
I'm telling you, it's sad to see a fighter that was once the caliber of James Braddock reduced to this.
All right, Jimmy.
Later, the husky man faces Joe.
An embarrassment, that's what it was. An embarrassment!
Where the hell's the purse?
You wouldn't have to be asking that if you gave a shit about your fighter.
Okay. He's fighting hurt. Now, maybe you got a bunch of fat and happy fighters at home can afford the rest of the month between bouts. I don't know, lucky you!
Christ, he hardly gets a punch in anymore! Fights being stopped by referees? He's pathetic! Fights like that keep people away.
The husky fellow halts inches in front of Jim's manager.
We're revoking his license, Joe. Whatever Braddock was going to do in boxing, I guess he's done it.
Wait a minute.
That's all.
The promoter turns away, leaving Joe under the stark overhead light. Joe bites down on a cigar. Now, Jim exits into an alley, his right arm wrapped in a towel.
Mr. Johnston!
Jim jogs up to the promoter.
Jim?
Joe follows.
What's going on?
You didn't tell him?
Yeah, of course I told him. But he wanted to hear it from you.
Come on, Mr. Johnston. No contest? I broke my hand. Okay? It's legit. Don't see me crying about it. I don't see what you got to complain about. I still went out there. I still put on a show. I did what I could do. You know, we did that boondock circuit for you, me and Joe. Remember?
Johnston nods with a meager smile.
I didn't quit on you. I didn't quit tonight. I didn't always lose. I won't always lose again. I can still fight.
Of course you can.
Thank
Go home.
I can still fight.
Go home to me and the kids, Jim.
Johnston gets into his car.
Go home? Go home with what? Go home with what? A broken hand from Mount Vernon? Mr. Johnston!
Jim watches the chauffeur-driven car pull away. Shifting on his feet, he works his jaw, then swaggers past Joe. The manager stays put, staring somberly after the promoter. Behind him, Jim sidles through a turnstile and gives it an angry shove as he clears through. Now, in their drab basement apartment, May sits in an armchair sewing a shirt. She sits up and glances toward the door. Jim enters and sets down his bag. May gets to her feet and gazes attentively at her husband, who approaches with a neutral expression on his face.
Baby.
As Jim takes her in his embrace, she wraps her arms around his broad shoulders. A thick cast covers his right forearm and wrist.
What happened?
I didn't get the dough. They didn't pay up. They called it a no contest, said the fight was an embarrassment. They decommissioned me.
They separate and gaze into each other's eyes. May notices the cast.
Jimmy, what happened to your hand?
It's broke again, three places.
In bed, Rosie wakes up.
They said I'm true, May. I said I can't be a boxer no more.
Mercy.
Jim shuts the door on a potbelly stove, then takes a seat across from May.
Okay, Jimmy, if you can't work, we're not going to be able to pay the electric or the heat. And, we're out of credit at the grocery, so, I think we need to pack the kids. They could stay at my sister's for a little while, and I'll take in more sewing.
May.
And that way we can make
doubles,
two, three
triples,
bread lines
whatever
a day.
I can find.
Jimmy, you can't work.
May, I can still work.
Jimmy, you can't work. Your hand's broken.
You see me lugging this around, you're right. They won't pick me. Not down the docks, not anywhere.
Jim gets out a leather-handled box.
So we're going to cover it up with the shoe polish. Okay?
Jim returns to his chair facing May and takes a rag from the box. Unseen, Rosie steps up to a curtained doorway and peeks in on them. Jim sets an open tin of shoe polish in May's palm. His wife looks tenderly upon him. As she caresses the fingers poking from his plaster cast, he looks into her eyes. Jim's chin trembles. He briefly bows his head, then forces words out.
I'm sorry.
No.
She shakes her head.
No.
As Jim bows his head again, May keeps her tear-moistened eyes on him. She leans close, nearly pressing her forehead to his, and drives her gaze squarely at him.
No.
She cups his cheeks and kisses him. Rosie watches. May sits on Jim's lap. They share a deep kiss, then warm smiles. Jim rests his head on her shoulder. Closing his eyes, he wraps his arms around her. Daytime. Water droplets sag off the gate at the docks.
That ain't five. Only five.
The eager men point and wave.
What?
Jim watches the foreman pace a few feet away.
Two.
The foreman steps closer.
Three.
A blurry view shows him choose another.
Four.
He points again. The view focuses on Jim.
Five. That's it.
Jim nods. Now, a stevedore rides on a descending pallet. Nearby, Jim and another man pair up, loading heavy sacks one at a time onto a dolly. They drive meat hooks into the sacks while grabbing a corner with a free hand. Jim uses his hook with his unbroken hand.
Hell happened to your face?
I got in a fight.
Yeah? What'd you go to that for?
That's a good question.
Mike Wilson.
Jim Braddock.
Just to fought a pretty good fighter with that name.
Mike and Jim start loading another dolly.
Some other guy going around using that name now. Can't fight for shit. Gambling man lose a lot of money on him. Twice.
As they move another sack, Jim doubles over briefly and flexes his fingers.
Hey, that hand ain't gonna work. You can't slow me down. I need this job.
I need a job, too.
As Jim reaches for another sack, Mike joins him. The foreman notices Jim's cast, painted to match his coat sleeve.
What's wrong with the goddamn hand?
Jim looks from the supervisor to Mike. Mike straightens his cap under the foreman's stern gaze and hooks the next sack.
You see us falling behind, Jake, huh? He's all right.
Jim and Mike resume hauling sacks onto the dolly. The foreman shakes his head as he walks away. Jim smiles.
Appreciate it.
Later, they enter a bar.
Now I'll get a cold beer.
Just the water for me, Quincy.
All I got today, big spenders.
Beer for him, too. I'm buying.
Mike eyes Jim.
Don't hurt my feelings.
It's been a while, but you don't have to twist my arm.
The two men find a table.
Yeah, I used to be a broker. Still lost it all in 29.
Yeah, me too. Just about everything I've earned in stocks. Even that little taxi company. I mean, who loses their dough on cabs in New York City, right? Yeah, I thought that one was gold for the grandkiddies.
You notice people living in shacks in Central Park? Call it the Hooverville. This government's dropped us flat. We need to organize, you know, unionize, fight back.
Fight? Fight what? Bad luck? Greed? Drought? No point punching things you can't see. You know, we'll work our way through this. FDR, he's got a handle.
Screw FDR. FDR, Hoover, they're all the same. You know, I come home one day, I stand in my living room, and between the mortgage and the market and the goddamn lawyer that was supposed to be working for me, it stopped being mine. It all stopped being mine. FDR ain't give me my house back yet.
A title, December 1933. As a man shovels snow outside a dress shop, Rosie arrives.
Mama, why can't I go to school? Is it because I'm a girl?
Maybe. Hadn't thought of that.
Later, Rosie and May walk down the alley to the tenement courtyard and halt.
Who's that man at our house?
A man tinkers with an electric meter.
Excuse me! Excuse me! Can I help you?
Sorry, lady. You're past due.
No. No, you can't. You can't. There's kids.
If I don't, they let me go. They already let two guys go.
Please. This apartment. It's what we got left that keeps us hanging on.
Lady, I got kids, too.
He adjusts the utility box. In the light snowfall, Rosie gazes up at her mother. Later, by candlelight, Jim stacks coins onto a $2 bill in a single.
$6.74. How much to turn it back on?
4 months. $44.12.
May serves dinner on a plate, then returns to her skillet.
If I work 26 hours out of every 24, it still won't add up.
May joins him at the table with her own plate.
Got nothing left to sell.
May nods and fidgets with her wedding ring.
All the guys you could have married, huh?
Yeah. What happened to those guys?
Jim chuckles and smiles. May holds out her hands, palms up, and Jim takes them in his own. They bow their heads. Jim opens his eyes, and they both look toward the children's bed.
It's Howard. Since this afternoon.
Jim frowns, then May leads them in prayer. As she bows her head, Jim opens his eyes and shifts restlessly.
Bless us, O Lord, and these thy gifts which we are about to receive from thy bounty.
May lifts her gaze to his.
Jim.
He lets go of her hands.
I'm all prayed up.
Daytime. A billboard shows a rosy-cheeked lady smiling over her steering wheel next to a chipper dog. It reads, "Buy at the Esso sign for happy motoring." In the snow beneath the sign, May and the children pull lattice boards off its base. Nearby, a woman hurries after a man who marches away with luggage.
Go on,
Later, May stokes their stove. Bundled in an armchair, Jay reads to Rosie. Howard sleeps near the stove.
Nice and warm, huh?
A wooden toy car sits on a nearby table. May takes a mug in hand and leans over Howard.
Baby. Baby. Look at Mommy.
Howard weakly rolls his head to face her. A knit cap frames his flushed complexion. She adjusts his blankets. May stays at his side. Her lips crease into a deep frown.
Mommy?
As Howard trembles, May looks to her eldest son.
What's wrong? Nothing, sweetheart. Mommy, we'll be right back, okay?
Jay and Rosie watch her exit quickly. In her sweater and scarf, May crosses the snow to an alcove between buildings. Indoors, Rosie and Jay swap a look. Outside, May shifts on her feet, her face seizing with grief. Sheltered from the lightly falling snow, she turns toward the building. She leans on the brick wall. Later, inside, a coal scuttle sits empty next to the stove, whose open grate reveals dying embers. May paces nearby, rubbing her hands together. Jim returns. Jim's smile fades as he peers across the room.
Howard's fever was getting worse. And then Rosie started to sneeze.
May remains by the wood stove. Jim marches deeper inside and finds the two beds empty.
Where are they, May?
Jim, we can't even keep them warm.
Where are the kids?
The boys will sleep on the sofa at my father's in Brooklyn, and Rosie will stay at my sister's. Jimmy, we can't keep them.
You don't make decisions about our children without me.
But what if they get really sick? We already owe Dr. McDonald.
You send them away, then all of this has been for nothing.
Well, it's just until we get
back
to
Haven,
and then they can come.
If we can't stay together, that means we lost. That means we're giving up.
I am not giving up. I am trying to protect our children.
May, I promised him. Outside the butcher's, I looked him in the eyes, and I promised him with all of my heart I would never, ever send him away. You can't do this.
You weren't here?
You can't break my promises.
Jim, you didn't see. You weren't here.
Jim stands still before her. His green eyes lift and take her in. May squares her chin and swallows hard.
I'm sorry.
Jim walks away.
Sorry, Jimmy.
He drops change on the table.
What are you doing?
Jim shrugs, then lowers his head and walks to the door.
Jim?
He walks out.
Jimmy?
May races after him.
Where are you going? Where are you going, Jimmy?
Outside, Jim pulls his coat tight and walks off. With snow steadily falling, May stands alone in the white courtyard. Jim heads down a street, flexing the fingers protruding from his cast. Later, indoors, a sign reads, Emergency Relief Administration of New Jersey. A man faces a clerk's grid wire window.
That doesn't qualify you, sir. What else can you tell me?
Problem is, my wife's losing all of her teeth. Got a relief order for her, and the doctor says it's due to insufficient dying. She's still nursing the baby on account of we can't afford milk for the family.
At an adjacent window, a chestnut-haired clerk counts out a few $5 and $2 bills for Jim. As she slides it into an envelope, the clerk looks into Jim's eyes.
I never thought I'd see you here, Jim.
He shifts his eyes uneasily and walks away with the envelope. Now, with a furrowed brow, Jim approaches a frosty glass window. As he leans against it, he looks outside, then drops his gaze. He's on a boat heading to New York City. A sign on its stern reads, Weehawken Ferry. Now, on a shoveled street, Jim passes two children collecting water from a hydrant. Later, men and women in elegant attire carry wrapped presents as they cross from under an awning to a Rolls Royce. The unemployed boxer makes his way past them, his gaze fixed. Now, Jim stops and stares across the street. His eyes scan the marquee for Madison Square Garden. With his hands slung in his pockets, he heads toward the entrance. Inside, he lightly taps on a door and enters a boxing club. He nods to a man in a suit and walks into the smoky lounge. Jim passes businessmen at tables and makes his way to the front of the room by a bar.
He jumped up, kicked his stool out of the ring, and he was furious. He started to leave.
As men in sofas and armchairs fix their attention on the decommissioned boxer, Johnston watches gravely.
Jimmy Brown.
More men face Jim. With his head lowered, he takes a deep breath.
The thing is, I can't afford to, pay the heat. I've had to farm out my kids.
Joe listens.
You know, to keep cutting shifts down at the docks, and you just don't get picked every day.
Jim removes his cap and shrugs.
I sold everything I got that anybody would buy.
The humble father looks at the men, then drops his gaze to the floor.
I went on public assistance. I signed on at the relief office. They gave me $19. I need another $18.38 so I can pay the bill and get the kids back.
A man in a vest bows his head.
You know me well enough to know if I had anywhere else to go, I wouldn't be here.
Johnston's gaze sinks.
If you could help me through this time, I sure would be grateful.
With tears in his eyes, Jim swallows. Keeping still, the businessmen eye the man standing before them. A hefty patron looks around the room, then gets up.
Sure, Jim. Sure.
He reaches into his pocket and signals for Jim to step forward. The hefty man places a bill in Jim's cap.
Good luck.
Jim nods.
Jim.
An older gentleman adds a few coins.
Hey, Jimmy.
As another member contributes, Jim's face brightens. He looks at two more gentlemen. They turn their heads and walk away. Seated at a desk, Joe gazes off and rubs his lips. Jim steps toward a sofa in the club where Johnston stands up. The promoter reaches into his pocket, then lets a handful of coins slide into the hat. Another gentleman drops in a few bills. As Jim lowers his gaze, a seated patron reaches out.
Here you go, Jim.
Joe looks on solemnly and presses his lips together. The decommissioned boxer meets his gaze. Jim glances around the room, then heads toward Joe. Passing framed pictures and a mirror, he reaches his old manager at the desk. Joe rises from his chair.
Sorry about Jesus Christ.
Swallowing, Jim's tear-filled eyes dart away from Joe. Joe lowers his head.
How short are you?
Jim picks through his cap and counts the donations. He shakes his head.
About $1.50.
Joe reaches into his pocket. Now at the basement apartment.
We're home! We're home! We're home!
The children race in and turn on lamps.
Good.
As May follows them, Jim sets down their luggage. In the bedroom, Howard jumps on a bed.
Read to me, Jake.
Jim takes a seat at the kitchen table and watches his boys. He shifts his attention to Rosie playing with a doll. Springtime. Outside, under the bright sun, several families gather around a birthday cake.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Howard. Happy birthday to you.
Make a wish, kids.
Nearly a dozen children blow out the candles. Yay. Howard frowns.
Hey, Howard, come on.
Gotta cut the cake up. Wanna line up, huh?
You looking forward to some chocolate cake?
I liked it better when we had our own.
I can understand that.
As the children devour cake slices, a priest approaches.
Hiya, Howard.
Hi.
Hey, your dad ever tell you that I used to spar with him?
You hit the father?
As often as I possibly could. He's kind of tricky, though. Hard to catch. Go and get some cake. Come on.
Guess you'd mash, Jimmy.
I can get an extra shift on a Sunday, yeah.
James.
Excuse me.
Across the street, a woman follows Mike.
How about fixing your family? I mean, what kind of father are you? Too proud to cross the street because she can't have her own birthday cake? And now you're drunk at church, for Christ's sake.
Had a joke, Sarah? Making a joke?
I'm just saying it's enough!
Hey, guys, where's the ref?
Why don't you stay out of this, Jim, huh? It's between man and wife.
How do you even call yourself that?
What'd you say to me?
Mike, come on. Hey.
Get your hands off
me. Oh, yeah, a couple of drinks is Sunday, no harm in that.
Oh, washed up, can't get a fight. Well, you want to fight me, huh?
Mike shoves Jim.
Mike, you don't have to do this. I ain't got no beef with you.
Come on! Can't make it in the ring, huh? Come on, Brett, I can take your head off! Come
Mike
on.
Swings. Jim ducks and pushes him. Mike hits a parked car.
You okay, baby? You okay?
Get off me. Go to hell. The both of you.
Jesus, Jim, he wasn't gonna hit me.
Jim stands slack-jawed.
Mike! Wait!
Sarah runs after her husband. Now in the tenement courtyard, a woman sweeps dust out of a garage set up as an apartment. While Jay bounces a ball off a wall, Jim crouches, facing Rosie.
I want to talk about rotating your body behind your fist. Bang. That's right. Right in the kisser, yeah.
Jim guides her fist into his cheek. As Joe approaches, Rosie throws punches into her dad's hand.
Good girl. You got a better jab than your dad.
Joe's arrival distracts Jim.
Boy, you are a brave man.
I really amazed at the store.
Rosie's next punch hits Jim's cheek.
That's a good one, kiddo.
You want to go and play with the other kids while I talk to Uncle Joe?
She kisses Jim, then runs off.
Joe Gould. Huh? Still looking dapper, I see.
Oh, certainly. Got to keep up appearances, right? Mm-hmm.
They shake hands.
Good to see you, Jimmy.
Nice to see you, Joe.
Well, nice day, huh?
Yeah.
Jim studies Joe's face.
You drove all the way out here to talk about the weather?
Maybe I was in the neighborhood. Did you ever think of that? A little fresh air. Mm-hmm.
Hey, Joe. This is Jersey.
Yeah, good point. Yeah. Good point. I got you a fight.
Ha ha, go to hell.
Oh, come on, you want it, don't you?
Oh, well, we're going to bring this up with the boxing commission or not?
Yes, yes, and they'll sanction it. This one fight and one fight only. It's not a comeback, right? It's just, it's one fight.
Why?
Because of who you're fighting.
How much?
Just once ask me who it is you're fighting.
How much?
$250. You're at the big show at the Garden tomorrow night. You fight Corn Griffin, Jimmy. Number two heavyweight contender in the world. Prelim before the championship bout.
You know, Joe, this ain't funny.
No, it's not. And it ain't no favor, either. Because Griffin's opponent got cut and he couldn't fight. So we had to find somebody they could throw in at a day's notice. Nobody legit would.
As Joe stops, Jim shakes his head.
Nobody would take a fight with Griffin without training. So I told him, use the angle Griffin's gonna knock out a guy never been knocked out. You meet, Jimmy.
Are you on the level, Joe?
Come on. Always.
For $250, I would fight your wife.
Now you're dreaming.
And your grandmother at the same time.
Teeth in or teeth out.
Take them out.
Then you're dead. You're down, you're gone. No chance.
$250 bananas.
Jill. Come here.
Jim hugs him. Nighttime. A sign reads Primo Carnera versus Max Baer, World's Heavyweight Championship. Words appear. Madison Square Garden Bowl, June 14th, 1934, in a locker room.
I mean, for Christ's sake, 100-and-something fights, you never been knocked out. Who the hell goes and sells his gear, huh?
80 fights as a pro, 50 as an amateur.
Oh, how soon they forget. I'm so sorry. Borrowed gear, borrowed robe, knock yourself out.
Jim uncovers the gear.
Hey, Joe.
Jim holds up a pair of bright red boxing shoes.
You know, I might as well get an ogre horn and chase him around the ring.
You been drinking?
Are you trying to hurt my feelings?
Well, you're too loose. You're spooking me. Sharpen up.
Come on, Joe. We both know what this is, right? I get to put a little more distance between my kids and the street. And I get to say goodbye at the Garden.
Jim looks up.
Full house, night of a big fight. Thank you very much.
Right, come on, hurry up. Let's get the ladder out of here. What the hell was that?
I ran out of soup on the line this morning.
Ran out of soup on the line? How the hell are you supposed to fight on an empty stomach?
In the arena.
Good evening. Welcome to tonight's broadcast of the Primo Carnera Max Bear fight for the heavyweight championship of the world.
Hash is all they had, okay? Eat quick.
You got a spoon?
Oh, for Christ's sake, it's not there. Come on, we gotta go anyway.
One bite, Joe. I'll eat with my fingers.
Whoa, hey. I don't have time to retape you. Just sit tight, and I'll find you a spoon. Christ's sake.
Joe walks out. With a bowl of hash sitting in front of him, Jim paces. He scans the locker room, then leans over and eats out of the bowl like a dog.
Is that a ghost I'm seeing? An apparition? Or is that James J. Braddock, the Bulldog of Bergen? How you feeling, Jimmy? How's that right hand?
Hey, Braddock, you're up.
As a balding man signals to Jim, the boxer looks back at his surprised visitor.
Spotty Lewis, how you doing?
How you doing?
Jim wipes his face with a towel.
July 18th, 1929. New York Herald.
Proven he was too young and too green and rushed to the top. Lockram wiped the ring with the Bulldog's career. A sad and somber funeral with the body still breathing.
I don't fight the fights, Jimmy. I just write about them, see?
Sporty. Save the craft for the customers.
As the boxer walks out, the chuckling reporter puffs a cigarette. Now, Jim and Joe walk side by side down a hallway leading to the arena. Sporty enters the press box.
Who's Jim Braddock? You get your pants out, kid. I got your lead line for you. Huh? I'm not kidding. Write this down.
A slick-haired man complies.
Walk from the locker room to the ring. It was the only time tonight. Old Jim Braddock.
Looking good, Jimmy.
Was seen on his feet. You got that?
Before tonight's championship battle, we'll bring you a special bout featuring Charlie Harvey's soldier boy, Corn Griffin. Griffin is the fella that ran rings around the champion Carnera in training. And who's his opponent? Looks like they dug old Jim Braddock out
at Quincy's bar.
Hey, Mike. Braddock, isn't that your buddy?
In the ring.
In this corner, the sensational heavyweight slugger from Fort Benning, Georgia.
At the bar, Mike approaches the radio.
To the top of the division, John Horn Griffin.
Wearing shiny green shorts, the beefy fighter jabs his fists.
His opponent, the popular battler who has never been KO'd in more than 80 professional bouts, the
Quincy Beer. We got a fight.
Veteran from North Bergen, New Jersey, James J. Braddock. Braddock!
Braddock waves to the packed arena. At the bar, Mike whistles and applauds.
Yeah!
Back in the ring, Jim scans the crowd and loosens his shoulders. Men and women, some standing and some sitting, fill the seats surrounding the ring. A smile creeps onto Jim's lips. The Irishman then eyes his opponent. Back at the bar.
Jimmy will need two good hands tonight.
The fighters meet in the center. As Griffin swings, Jim ducks, then punches Jim in the face.
Griffin storms out of his corner. Things are up tempo right away.
The men circle around one another.
Come on, Braddock, make a fight of it.
Griffin throws a right hook. As Jim recovers, his opponent nails his face again. Griffin's blows push Jim back.
Get out of it! Get out, Jimmy!
At the bar. Griffin delivers an uppercut, and Jim falls at the bar.
Shut up. I want to hear this. Shut up.
Jim?
You're fine. Stay down.
As a referee directs Griffin away, Jim looks up from the mat with blood dripping from his brow. He focuses on Griffin.
One.
Stay down. What's the hurry? Hey.
Jim rises to all fours.
Like the left. Try two lefts. Give him two lefts.
Pop, pop. Double it up.
How about it?
Jim nods and gets to his feet.
Let's go. Nine.
Braddock,
Yeah, come on, Jimmy, on you. Come on.
Referee waving Griffin in.
As Griffin charges, Jim ducks and rams into him. Jim pushes his opponent to the center and pounds him in the face.
Welcome to New York.
Jim heads to his corner, grinning.
That's more like it. Let me see that cut.
Ah, you look great.
Oh, it sure as hell beats working on the docks. Say, the two jabs look sensational. They look sweet. Now, he's loading up on you. You see that? He opens up after you jab, and you got to come in there with the right. Real quick. Pop, pop, bang. Because you got to stop some of those left hands.
Jim spits.
See any getting past my head?
Keep moving. Pop, pop, bang.
The fight resumes. Griffin swings and misses.
Griffin still winging big shots. He wants to be the first to stop Braddock.
Jim lands a 1-2 combination.
Gets in another big right hand. Smacks his head back with that one.
The fighters clinch, then separate.
Come on. Griffin loading up.
Griffin lands 2 punches. A sign reads round 3.
That's 2 rounds more than I thought he was gonna go.
In Jim's corner.
He's a half a step behind you. Do you feel that? Pop, pop, bang. Stick with him. Stick with him. Busy, busy.
6 minutes of fury so far. Braddock has the look of a man trying to hold back an avalanche.
Jim's tucked elbows block incoming punches.
Cuts him with the left, and Braddock is stepping in close calls.
Jim circles his opponent. The Irishman dodges 2 jabs.
Come on in, Jim.
Jimmy's finally moving his head.
Jim gets in a solid right hook. As Griffin corners him, Jim ducks outside and throws a hard left. A left-right combo sends Griffin into the ropes. The crowd jumps up. At the bar, Mike cheers.
Where the hell are you pinned, Jimmy Braddock?
What?
Jim's nostrils flare over his open mouth as he moves in. He sidesteps a blow, punches Griffin in the ribs and head, then locks him in the corner with repeated blows.
No, Taylor! Take it to him! Another big break by Braddock!
Jim thrusts his gloves into Griffin's chest. As his opponent attempts to block, Jim fires relentlessly. The Irishman jabs Griffin's ribs, then hammers his face. An uppercut sends Griffin's head lolling back. Jim continuously strikes Griffin's face, and the ref splits them up. The ref pushes the Irishman away from his slumping opponent. As the crowd applauds, Joe climbs up. With a bloodied face, Griffin steps away from the ropes and collapses. Joe hugs Jimmy. Sporty shakes his head.
It's pandemonium here in the garden.
At the bar, Mike puts on a buddy's hat. In the ring. Now in the locker room, Jim uses a spoon to finish the hash. Joe enters.
Oh, Jesus. Hey, it's Christ. Jesus, Mary and Joseph. Mary, Magdalene, all the saints and martyrs and Jesus. Did I say Jesus? Where the hell did that come from?
I don't know. When my hand was broke, I had to work down the docks, and I had to use my left.
So what? No, that and luck.
Oh, luck.
Yeah. No, don't mess, that Irish
luck. Luck of the Irish trap. No, sir. Lucky? That's something you ain't been in a long time, brother.
Well, everybody's due.
Oh, do or not, I'll take it. You had the left. The left, but you were bouncy. You were bouncy. With pop, pop, bang! Pop, pop, bang! Unbelievable. Pop, pop, sliding, sliding, slipping. You were like a cat.
I did that on a hash. Imagine what I would have done to him if I had a couple of steaks.
Joe softens his gaze.
Jimmy, that was one hell of a goodbye.
The winner smiles and nods. Joe opens the door to a crush of reporters.
Here you go, fellas.
They flood the locker room and snap pictures of the victor. Now, in the ring, 2 hulking boxers duke it out. In the hallway, Joe and Jim step to the arena doorway and watch. Words read, World Heavyweight Championship, Primo Carnera versus Max Baer. A curly-haired boxer in black trunks waves tauntingly to his opponent, then wallops him with a haymaker. He knocks the fighter down. The boxer in blue trunks crawls to get up. The curly-haired fighter winks toward the press, then spins his opponent against the ropes with a right hook.
This is fighting. Why didn't you just hit him with a goddamn chair?
Reaching for the ropes, the falling boxer gets to his feet.
Griffin was supposed to fight Baer next. So kiss your ass for saving him from that fight.
Baer in the black trunks lands a hook on Carnera's jaw. As Baer hammers the burly fighter's head, Jim winces. Camera flash bulbs pop. Carnera, barely standing, leans a glove on the top rope. Baer hits him again, and Carnera clings with both gloves. Baer lifts his arm victoriously. Jim and Joe slowly clap as they eye the slugger's triumphant salute to the crowd. Baer hugs his trainer amid the cornermen and judges that fill the ring. He then struts with one muscular arm raised and flashes the crowd a pleased grin. Joe and Jim leave. Now, in the basement apartment, a nightstand lamp shines next to the kids' bed. Lying on their backs, their eyes remain wide open. They quickly lift their heads.
Come on, he's home.
As they patter into the kitchen, Jim walks in. May emerges in her bib front apron and watches her husband shut the door behind him. Jim sits wearily, his gaze turned downward. He reaches into his vest pocket, takes something out, and palms it. Jay cranes to see. Howard and Rosie stare. May stands behind the children, wringing her fingers. A tentative smile settles on her lips. Jim looks up.
I won.
Jim holds up some money. The children race into his welcoming arms. Now May fries cold cuts as the kids set the table. Jim meets her worried glance.
No, baby. It's just one fight.
As May nods and smiles, Jim lifts his lips to hers. Pressing against him, May puts her free hand on his shoulder as she turns the meet. Daytime. At the docks, Jim flexes his right hand and glances at the padlock gate. The men crowd the fence. Jake peers through the gate at Jim, then points at him.
Four.
Jim smiles.
Five.
Later, a man hands Jim a pair of meat hooks.
Thanks.
Jim heads toward the dock.
Braddock.
Motioning Jim aside, Jake shows him a sports page headline. Amazing. Braddock KOs Griffin in three.
Listen in last night.
Is that really you?
Jim regards the paper, nods, and smiles.
Yeah.
Didn't think I'd be seeing you back here.
Yeah, I came up at the last minute, you know. It's a one-fight deal. A purse of $250. My end of that was a little less than half. It was like 123. We owe 118. Left him with $5.
Makes you a rich man, huh?
Not around here.
Good fight.
Thanks.
Dock 7.
7.
Later, a crane lowers a load of cloth-wrapped bales. Beneath it, Mike joins Jim in guiding it down.
Hey, Jim. Hey, Mike.
Grabbing the load's ropes, they unhook the corners.
Good fight.
Thanks.
Using their handheld hooks, Jim and Mike load the bales onto waiting dollies.
I want to hit Sarah.
I know, Mike.
I couldn't live with myself if I didn't hit her.
Each bundle fills a worker's dolly.
Just get so angry, all this shit.
As they hook another bale, Jim nods.
You know, if you were going to win, you could have told me.
If I knew I was going to win, I would have bet on myself.
Now in Jim's neighborhood.
Why can't you ever listen to me, huh?
I don't know.
In his parked car, Joe spots May and Rosie walking forward. May sees him drive off.
Why don't you go play with the boys, sweetheart? Be careful.
Rosie runs down the alley past Jim.
Hey, Rosie.
Hi, Daddy.
Jay and Howard play in a decrepit car parked by the courtyard garages. Rosie and a friend go to her fort.
You know, Joe Gould was just here.
Yeah, I saw him.
He did? He thinks the commission might be willing to reverse that ruling. He thinks he can get me another fight. Oh. He wants me to stop working and get back in shape.
I thought it was just the one fight.
Jim shrugs.
Oh, yeah.
Pacing with aimless steps, Jim smiles over a wad of bills.
He fronted us $175 so I can train.
May's worried gaze shifts to the money.
You know what that is right there? That's a second chance.
Jim gives her the money.
That's what that is.
He strokes her hair, steps back, and folds his arms with a smile.
It's not that I'm not grateful or proud. I am. I'm so proud of you. But we cut off easy when you broke that hand. We're back to even now.
Right. And 9 months from now, we're back in the same boat.
Baby, please. We just don't have anything left to risk.
May. There's still some juice in these legs, and I can still take a few.
Jim lifts May up.
Baby, please.
Holding her, he gazes up into her eyes.
Just let me take him in the ring. At least I know who's hitting me.
Suspended off her feet, May blinks thoughtfully as she eyes him. Jim grins and kisses her. With their arms wrapped around each other, Jim gently sets her down. May sadly lowers her gaze, then lifts it. Jim strokes her chin.
I'm gonna tell the kids.
Hey, Jay! Guess what?
He slings Jay over his shoulder.
I got another fight!
Who with?
I don't know, but he's going down. Hey, Howard!
Pouting slightly, May resolutely juts out her chin. Now, May marches across a busy street. The square-roofed automobiles that pass have chromy grills and bug-eyed headlights. May rounds a corner wearing a dressy russet blouse and a brown cloche hat. Behind her, two vendors sit at a folding table, and men in business suits and fedoras follow different paths. May crosses a carpet to a residential building's posh entry. Inside, she faces an apartment door. May lifts her knuckles to the wood again. Inside, Joe walks to the door and checks the peephole.
Oh, Jesus.
May stays put.
Joe, open the door.
As a woman inside approaches, Joe lifts a shushing finger.
Joe, open the damn door. Don't hide in your fancy apartment. I want to talk to you.
The door remains shut.
You are not going to make my husband your punching bag all over again. We are just getting by, and you're taking him from his work like some blood-sucking little leech. And I will not let you get him hurt again like that. Do you hear me? I will not let you!
Joe opens the door.
Guess you better come in.
May steps into an elegant and virtually empty room. Under a crystal chandelier, a card table and folding chairs sit on a parquet floor. Later, Joe pours tea. The ladies each sit with a blossom-patterned china cup.
Too sweet. Per usual.
Really? Go figure. Yours?
Nice, thanks.
May and Joe trade sheepish glances.
Sorry about that.
Joe gives the door a dismissive wave.
Just don't want folks to see you down, that's all.
He sits.
I didn't know. I mean, I thought that...
That's the idea.
He puts up his dukes.
Always keep your hands up.
May nods.
Yeah. So... Saw the last of it 2 days ago. So Jimmy could train.
Why?
Mrs. Gould bites her lip and shifts her gaze.
Well, sometimes you have an instinct, May. You see something in a fighter.
Joe shakes his head.
You don't even know if it's real. You're looking for it so bad. At all.
But this is crazy. I mean, you don't even know if you can get him a fight.
Oh, I'll get him a fight. Believe me, if it's the last thing I do, I'll get him a fight.
Honey,
go get us some of those crackers, would you?
Joe gives his wife a dapper half smile.
She looks good wearing the pants. Mm-hmm.
As the women smile, Joe glances at each, then leaves them. Mrs. Gould watches him disappear behind the doorway, then lets her smile fade. Her gaze shifts uneasily and settles on Mrs. Braddock.
Can you ever stop yours? When he sets his mind to a thing?
May sadly shakes her head.
I wish I could.
Sunlight silhouettes the two women.
See, I never know who was harder on. Them or us. We have to wait for them to fix everything. And every day...
Mrs. Gould looks away, smiles, and shakes her head.
They feel like they're failing us. Really, it's just the world that's failed, you know.
Behind May, a few photos grace a mostly bare bookshelf. Two classical columns support an empty mantel.
Lovely apartment.
Mrs. Gould holds her teacup.
Thank you.
Now in the promoter's office, Johnston puffs a cigar.
Now, what am I going to go and do that for?
You saw the papers. News had to print extra copies the day after Braddock's fight. People are sentimental, you know. Some people are sentimental.
Yeah, so tell me why I care.
You're still sore over the way Braddock took down Griffin. Fine, I can understand that. It was a heartbreak for a lot of people. Yes, but look, look.
Joe scoots his chair closer to the big desk.
You got guys fighting an elimination series over who gets a shot at Max Baer for the championship in June. John Henry Lewis, he's your number two in line. Now, he already defeated Braddock once at Frisco, correct? Say you put Braddock back in a game against Lewis. Lewis wins, you get your revenge on Braddock, and your boy has gotten a top-flight tune-up with full publicity before Lasky, and what happens? You make more money.
Johnston nods thoughtfully.
Ha, ha, ha. Now, say, on the other hand, by some minute infinitesimal chance, God forbid, Braddock beats Lewis. Oh, now you got a sentimental favorite go up and lose against Lasky, and what happens? You make more money. James, either way, you're a richer man with Braddock back in the ring than if he's not. And come on, don't be foolish. We both know the name of this game.
Joe leans back in his chair.
And it sure as hell ain't pugilism.
As Johnston draws on his cigar, the tip glows bright orange. He removes the stogie from his lips and glances about the dimly lit office. Sleeves rolled up, he cocks his head. Joe stares.
They ought to put your mouth in a circus.
Joe dampens a brief smile.
What do you say?
Later, Jeanette, Jim's trainer, watches the Bulldogs bar.
Don't chase him around. Cut him off.
Hey, hey, hey!
Joe runs in and steps up to the mat's edge.
I got you a fight. Boom. Yeah, you're gonna fight John Henry Lewis again.
Hey, Joey, I could kiss you.
No, please, not in front of the fellas, please.
Isn't John Henry one of Johnson's boys?
You let me worry about that, please.
Now I know why you won't kiss me. You're all puckered out already.
Oh, brother, you have no idea.
Lewis kicked our ass in Frisco.
Yeah, all right.
Hey, Mike.
Who's this? Who's our ass up there?
Joe Gould, Mike Wilson. Mike Wilson, Joe Gould.
That guy ain't been beat in 10 fights. But you win on a long shot, and that's a great payday for me.
That's great.
I'll keep that in mind, Mike.
More important things to think about. Come on.
Joe takes Jim to a corner.
No, I ain't gonna bullshit you. All right? Now, you win one, I can get you another. Win again, and then things maybe start getting serious around here.
Jim nods.
Jimmy?
He meets Joe's gaze.
When?
Jim's gloved hand briskly rubs Joe's jaw. Now, Jim jabs the speed bag, keeping a steady rhythm with his punches. Now, twilight filters through the gym's windows as Jim jumps rope. Later, as Jim strikes the punching bag, Jeanette paces behind him. Later still, accelerating his bare-fisted work on the speed bag, Jim keeps his elbows level. Now, in the ring, he spars with a helmeted opponent. Ringside, Mike, Jeanette, and a second sparring partner watch the fight. Later, Jim works out tirelessly at the speed bag. Nighttime. At home, May packs Jim's trunks into a brown paper bag as he straightens a tie tucked under his vest. She faces him sadly as he approaches.
Thanks.
May musters a smile.
I know this isn't what you wanted, but I can't win without you behind me.
I'm always behind you.
Thank you, babe.
Jim kisses May on the cheek.
Hey, I got a great idea. You want to come along? Come on. This is... All right. Oh, okay. I'll make that a rain check then.
Grinning, he backs out the door. His wife's gaze sinks heavily to the floor. Now, in a ring, Jim faces an African-American boxer. As they advance on each other in slow motion, words read, John Henry Lewis versus James J. Braddock, Madison Square Garden, November 16, 1934. As the view shifts to normal speed, Lewis lands a three-punch combo. He follows with a flurry of body blows. Then Jim counters with a right hook.
Lewis, Still moving well here in the fourth. He dances in and out before Buttock can react.
Circling left, Lewis jabs at Jim's head. Jim dodges.
Don't let him set the pace, Jimmy.
Jim takes a barrage of hits. Lewis's manager reacts.
There you go, there you go.
A left-right combo from Jim backs Lewis off.
Buttock slides to his right, tries cutting down the ring.
Jim moves in, slugging Lewis's head. Ringside, Sporty watches sternly. As Jim lands several head and body blows, Lewis backs into a corner. Lewis's manager leans on the mat.
Lewis spins his way up the rope and looks to resume control at the bell.
In their corners, the managers face their athletes.
There we go. Suck it up, suck it up. Deep breath, deep breath. Deep.
He's in faster than I remember.
Yeah, he's fast, he's fast, he's fast. Big deal, you're not so bad yourself.
What are you doing? You beat this guy easy last time. Yeah, the same guy. You gotta use your speed. Keep that jab in his face and keep sliding to his right.
You see that? Keep him in front of you. Cut him off, all right? And let go with the punches. Hit him. He ain't gonna like it. I guarantee you, the more you hit this bastard, the slower he's gonna get.
He's an old man. He's too slow. He can't keep up with you. Come on.
How's that
cut? Use that jab. He's all right. He's all right.
Knock the legs out from under him. Trap him in the corner and really work him. Do not fight this fight his way. You make him fight this fight your way. Let's go. You got him. You got him.
As the round starts, Jim slams Lewis's head and body.
A left to the body and a hard right to the head. A left right left by Lewis. His dancing shoes are off. It's a fight now, folks.
Work his body.
Punching him with both hands now. Toe to toe. No one giving an inch.
Lewis's right knocks Jim's jaw. Then his left connects.
That left has some power.
Stay with it.
Lewis backs away from Jim's fast blows.
Don't give him any room. No room.
Lewis dances around Jim.
Get out of court.
Buttock pushing all the action now. Lewis can't discourage him. Tremendous pressure from Jimmy. Lewis is running out of real estate in this 24-foot ring.
As Lewis takes a tremendous jab, sweat flies.
And Lewis is down.
Stunned, Sporty jumps to his feet. Joe watches intensely.
Catch. Good boy.
As Jim backs away, Lewis lifts his head.
One. Get up.
Two.
Come on.
Three. Four. Five. Six.
Lewis gets to his feet. The ref checks him as he warily eyes Jim.
The referee wipes his gloves and Braddock steams back to ringside.
Close it down.
Jim moves in with a right hook. Right hook spins Lewis down. Our view spins, then reveals a Caucasian boxer duking it out with Jim. Words appear: Art Lasky versus James J. Braddock, Madison Square Garden, March 22nd, 1935. Johnston smiles.
Side to side, side to side.
In the tenth, riding high after his dazzling victory over John Henry Lewis, Jim Braddock has just hit a wall named Art Lasky.
As Lasky slams Jim's ribcage, Jeanette confers with Joe.
You can't keep taking those body shots.
No, he's cropped a couple of ribs for sure.
Jim dances out of range of Lasky's left.
Lasky walks through those jabs and keeps working on Braddock's body. But Braddock won't fall. He's making Lasky work hard for every minute of every round.
That's it. Get out.
The fighters hunker in close and slug it out. The fans watch as Jim and Lasky trade blows to the head. Sweat flies. Lasky pounds at Jim's upper body.
Lasky's starting to impose his will. He's showing why Jimmy Johnson is making noises about matching him with Max Baird for the title.
An X-ray view shows Jim's ribs fracture. The sluggers lock in a clinch. As they wrangle, the ref follows closely. The ref separates them. As the fighters go to their corners, the sports writers applaud.
Don't sit down. You're not tired.
Jeanette brings the stool.
Get that thing out of here. He don't need it.
Lasky watches.
Is he looking over at you? Shake your head like you don't need it. Shake your head like you don't want it.
Yeah.
Why is he sitting down?
Pay attention.
Yeah, now he's going to wonder, if Braddock is such an old man, why is he still standing? Why is he still coming at me? You're stronger than this guy. Don't back up. Don't back off. This guy is a bull rusher. He's going to keep coming at you all night until you stop him. He can't back up. You stop him.
Jim's view blurs.
You gotta beat this son of a bitch. You gotta beat this son of a bitch from the inside out.
You hear me? You gotta get in there.
You get in there and you hit him and you keep hitting him until you break his nose. You fill his face with blood. Beat him from the inside out, Jim. From the inside out.
Later.
Maxie continues to fire. Braddock looks like he's finally starting to wilt.
That's it. That's more like it.
Jim lands two jabs.
Pass him up.
His opponent goes for his body.
Maxie now looking to put a trim ending to Braddock's fairy tale comeback. Lasky pounding hard shots for the body.
Lasky lands a right hook. Jim's mouthpiece flies through the air. Staggering, Jim remembers his children sleeping in one bed and eating in a soup kitchen. Quick flashes show May frowning and the past due notice on the milk bottle. Jim looks up at Lasky, who appears to sink away. His mouthpiece tumbles across the canvas, leaving a trail of spit. Fans rise from their seats. Remembering his children's bed lying empty, Jim looks up at his opponent's swollen face. The bulldog grins, blood trickling from his mouth as he crosses the ring. As he leans over for his mouthpiece, droplets of blood spatter the canvas. He spits out some more blood, then replaces the mouthpiece. Lasky watches incredulously. Jim wipes blood and sweat from his eyes, bangs his gloves together, and resumes his nimble footwork. Lasky frowns. Jim knocks Lasky to the ropes. He punches his opponent's nose. Lasky grimaces, sweat spraying from his hair.
Right in there and get his nose!
A woman in the crowd covers her mouth as Jim throws more punches. Now, a card reads round 13.
Braddock comes in with a hard shot to the body. Younger Lasky looks like he's starting to welcome the pressure from the Bulldog of Nordbergen.
Round 14.
Braddock's now back on the attack. Now the precious combination by Braddock. And Lasky's blowing blood from the nose. The 15th and final round.
Jim relentlessly batters Lasky's face with blows. Johnston looks around at the standing fans.
And the winner, by unanimous decision, James J. Braddock!
More spectators spring to their feet. With one arm held up by the referee, Jim shakes the other victoriously. He wipes sweat from his eye, then rolls his shoulders. Joe gives him a courteous nod. Jim returns the gesture, then shakes his fists. Now in an elevator.
Thanks, buddy.
The pudgy, well-dressed passenger steps out into a hotel hallway.
Max? Max!
Hey, well, a little bit of it.
Jim Braddock just beat Lasky. They made him the number one contender.
Max, what are we going
to do? Shut up.
Maxie!
Shut up!
As Bear glares back at his two scantily clad guests, the well-dressed man rolls his eyes. The bare-chested champion faces him.
I'm not going to fight Jimmy Braddock. He's a chump. You tell Johnston to bring me somebody who can fight back.
You're going to bust your contract. It's done, Max.
Bear shuts the door in his face. Now, at the relief office, Jim stands in one of the many long lines. A few people notice him and crowd close, whispering. His face bruised and swollen, Jim eyes the gossipers. He gives them a shy wave. Later, at the chestnut-haired clerk's window, he places a form on the counter, then sets down a roll of cash bound in rubber bands. A note around the money lists the amount, $323.60. Jim drops some coins on the form and slides it all to the clerk. Picking up the roll of bills, she eyes him strangely. He smiles. Now, at home, Jim peers through the front door's window at May. He enters with a bouquet of roses. He holds the flowers out over the kitchen table. May reads the attached note and smiles. She runs her hand over her husband's. He removes his cap.
Hey, Mrs. Braddock.
They kiss.
Sarah's here.
I am?
Yeah.
Sarah enters.
Decided to sleep.
Hey.
Hey, Jim.
She takes a seat. Jim stands hunched over the table.
Mike's gone missing.
How long?
Shadows mask Sarah's troubled face.
3 days. I've been staying at my brother's since Jake cut him.
Jake fired him? I didn't know that.
You know how Mike gets. All his talk, so much trouble.
He's been sleeping nights down in the Hooverville. My brother didn't have room for both him and us.
Mike said, you know, if he had to stay down there anyway, he was going to try to get everybody organized.
Something's wrong, Jim. I know it.
Now I'm here and there's some trouble in Hooverville. He wouldn't leave me and the baby for this long. He just wouldn't. I didn't know who else to come to, Jim.
Later in the dark, men flee past Jim. He moves through an array of crowded shacks.
Come on, out of the way. Beat it. Move along.
Words appear. Hooverville, Central Park, New York City. Jim eyes a poster of Little Red Riding Hood and the Big Bad Wolf.
Get the hell out of here, coppers!
A man hurls a bottle.
Mike! Mike Wilson!
A resident vomits.
Mike Wilson!
Jim turns, looking all around. Three men eye him coldly.
If you let these commies in here and start a riot, then what do you think's gonna happen?
Jim wanders between the shanties.
Pull a knife on me, son of a bitch.
Seeing a group of cops beating a man with clubs, Jim hides back against a wall.
We tried to break up these agitators. Peaceful like, but they charged us.
What is this?
The horses got spooked, wagons turned over. Three or four of them got run over. They hurt pretty bad.
Policemen hold back a crowd. Beyond an overturned wagon, men try to put out a fire. Jim watches medics carry a body away on a stretcher. A man lies on the ground, his chest heaving. It's Mike. The boxer kneels to him.
Hey, you're okay, Mike.
Yes, sir.
I'll tell, sir.
I won't be late, sir.
Two ambulance workers fold Mike's arms across his chest and hoist him onto a stretcher. Fire glows on Jim's face as he watches them carry Mike away. Now, a numbered pine box fits into a grave. Jim stands in the open pit, wiping his hands. May, Rosie, Jay, and Howard stand with other mourners. Behind the priest, gravediggers idle near a truck filled with several more of the simple wood caskets. Jim and another worker climb out from the grave, which is filled with a long row of coffins. Wearing a black vest and tie, the boxer joins his family. Sarah holds onto her black shawl as it billows in the wind. May watches her sadly. Jim's wife looks down at Mike's plain pine coffin. Now, at a press conference. Squinting against the photographer's flash bulbs, May and Jim strain to keep smiles on their faces. Joe sits next to them.
How about it, Steve? Yeah? Why not?
Well, that's it. Question short, to the point. We're going to start off with Frank Essex. Frank Essex.
All right, take it easy. PDG. Frank Essex, Daily News. Got a lot of reporters here today. A lot of people interested in this fight. What do you got to say to your fans today, Jimmy?
The boxer leans into a row of radio station microphones.
I guess I'm grateful for the opportunity. I know that these days not everybody gets a second chance.
His wife watches closely.
You know, I have a lot to be grateful for. You know, I have three beautiful, healthy, troublemaking kids. You know, I have the prettiest wife a man could wish for.
Bob Johnson, Boston Globe. 2 days ago, we ran a story about you giving your relief money back. Can you tell our readers why?
Jim leans closer to the bank of microphones.
I believe we live in a great country. A country that's great enough to help a man financially when he's in trouble. But lately, I've had some good fortune, and I'm back in the black. And I just thought I should return it.
Listen, what's the first thing you're going to do if you make world champion?
First thing, I'm going to have to go and buy some turtles. Yeah, well, I said to the kids when I was leaving the house this morning that I was going to bring back the title, and they thought I said turtle.
So, yeah. So naturally, I don't want to let him down, but if I could bring home the title and a turtle, they sure would be tickled. You know?
We got that title turtle,
Jake,
right?
Jake Greenblatt from Chicago Trib.
Hello, Jake.
Been a while. What's changed, Jimmy? I mean, you couldn't win a fight for love of money, right? I mean, how do you explain your comeback?
Well, you know, the truth is, Jake, for a number of years there, we was fighting injured. You know, I broke my hand more than once. I got in a car accident one time, was on the road, and I had to get that fixed. I had a run of bad luck. And this time around, I know what I'm fighting for.
Oh, yeah? What's that, Jimmy?
Milk.
Milk?
Sporty Lewis, New York Herald.
Sporty.
Actually, my question's for Mrs. Braddock. Mrs. Braddock, my readers would love to know, how do you feel about the fact that Max Bass killed two men in the ring?
May gapes.
So how do you feel about that, ma'am? Are you scared for your husband's life?
She's scared for Max Bass, who she's scared for, Mr. Lewis.
How about one more question?
Flashbulbs pop in May's eyes. Frowning, she looks over at her husband, who wears a forced smile. Later, a woman shows Joe and Jim into an office. They wear their suits from the press conference.
Sit downstairs. You want to see us?
Joe, Jim, come on in. Have a seat.
Johnston picks up a newspaper.
Right here.
He sets it down on the corner of his desk for Joe.
Editorial says this fight is good as murder. And everybody associated with it should be hauled into court and prosecuted afterwards. They say the paper's getting all sorts of letters from people saying you're their inspiration, like you saved their lives or something. You ask me, it's a lot of crap.
He closes the window blinds.
If I'm going to promote this fight, I'm not getting hung out to dry if something happens to you.
You're all heart.
My heart's for my family, Joe. My brains and my balls are for business, and this is business. You got me?
Gotcha.
Furrowing his brow, Joe trades looks with his fighter.
You will know exactly what you're up against. And my attorney, Mr. Mills, will witness that I've done everything in my power to warn you.
Scowling, Jim's manager watches Mills cross the room.
You know, I seen the Carnera fight.
Carnera's height saved him.
He was knocked down 12 times.
Exactly.
He closes the drapes.
Would have been worse if he was shorter. Bear had to punch up to hit him. Took a little something off.
Johnston starts a film projector. On a screen, black and white footage of a fight flickers in and out of focus.
That's Frankie Campbell. Stand-up fighter, knows how to take a punch.
He fights hunched forward.
His style familiar, Jim?
Jim looks over at Johnston.
Like looking in a mirror, huh?
Hey, he don't need to see this.
He'll see it or I'll call off the fight.
In the film, Bear hits Campbell repeatedly in the head, knocking him to a corner.
Oh.
Light flickers on Jim's sober face. Bear nails Campbell with a series of hooks.
Do you see that combination? Campbell didn't go down on the first punch, was a tough guy.
Bear knocks his opponent down.
Second one? Killed him on the spot.
The referee checks Campbell, then waves frantically at the officials. The fighter's cornermen rush to his side.
Just cut it off, will you?
Johnston stops the projector. Jim keeps his eyes glued to the screen as the promoter rewinds the reel.
The autopsy said that his brain was knocked loose from the connecting tissue.
Campbell rises up from the canvas.
Consider your ass fully covered, okay?
Jim rises from his seat.
Run it again.
Johnston and Joe give him surprised looks. The promoter starts the projector again, playing the reel forward. As the two fighters square off, Jim steps closer, studying the footage intently. Bear hits Campbell repeatedly in the head, knocking him to a corner. Jim shifts his jaw as the giant slugger nails his opponent with a series of hooks. A quick color drain flash takes us into the fight. As Campbell leans over against the ropes, Bear winds up his right arm and knocks the fighter down with a haymaker. His body rolls back with a lifeless gaze. The footage shows the referee checking the downed fighter and his cornermen rushing in. As Bear towers over them, Jim swallows. Back in the ring, Bear adjusts his gloves as he looks at us. The projector's light flickers on Jim's face. Now Bear approaches with a vacant, trance-like stare. One side of Jim's face twitches. The footage shows Bear's trainer throwing a towel over the slugger's shoulders. The film stops.
Remember Ernie Schaff? Nice guy. You lost one to him in 31.
He opens the drapes.
Ernie took one of those on the chin from Bear. He was dead and didn't know it. Next fight, first little nothing jab. Put him to sleep forever. Detached brain, they said.
Jim looks at his manager, who gives him a grim look.
Joe?
Blinking, he faces Johnston.
No snappy comeback?
Hey, it ain't my skull the guy's gonna try and stove in.
You want to think about it?
Squinting, Jim shifts on his feet.
You think you'd tell me something? What, like, boxing's dangerous, something like that?
Suppressing a smile, Joe looks at Johnston.
You don't think triple shifts or working nights on the scaffolds is just as likely to get a guy killed?
The promoter stands near a window.
How many guys died the other night, living in cardboard shacks trying to save on rent money? Guys who are just trying to feed their family. Because men like you have not yet quite figured out a way to make money out of watching that guy die. In my profession, and it's my profession, I'm a little more fortunate.
Bathed in sunlight, Johnston looks down at his lawyer, who nods.
All righty, then. You guys have dinner here tonight. Take your wives. It's on me. We'll snap some pics on your way out. You change your mind tomorrow. At least we got some good press out of it.
Good. Come on.
Jim follows his manager. Now, a waiter carries a covered silver tray into an elegant club. Couples in formal wear dance at the center of the dining area. May follows Mrs. Gould to their table.
It's gorgeous. It's gorgeous.
Wow.
You, Jimmy. Oh. Can we get silver faucets?
Oh, what do you want, a dozen?
Right.
Joe spreads a newspaper.
Little bird told me to check the evening conditions. Let's see what I got. Boxer Jim Braddock has come back from the dead to change the face of courage in our nation.
Oh, that's nice.
Sporty Lewis wrote that.
Sporty Lewis?
Look at this. In a land that's downtrodden, Braddock's comeback is giving hope to every American.
Joe holds a cigar as he reads.
People who are ready to throw in the towel are finding inspiration in their new hero, Jim Braddock. As Damon Runyon has already written, he's truly the Cinderella Man.
Cinderella Man?
Yeah.
Oh, I like it. It's kind of girly.
Yeah, kind of, yeah.
Yeah, this is going to be fun.
A waiter starts to clear the table.
Jim.
Oh, fine.
Thank you, Father.
Thank you. You know what? I got the bill here. Yeah. Johnston, he's a big spender. He's going to leave a big, big tip.
Oh, yeah?
He's a real peach. Mm-hmm. Gotta love the guy, right?
May wraps the rest of her steak in her napkin and sneaks it under the table. Bear arrives and shakes hands with the maitre d'. The Cinderella Man follows his wife's gaze. As a waiter removes Bear's fur coat, the champion whispers in the maitre d's ear. Jim turns in his seat, facing the large man fully. Bayer winks as he crosses the room with a group of well-dressed friends. The Braddocks and Goulds watch the maitre d' escort them to the bar.
Oh, boy.
Jim cocks an eyebrow.
You think Johnson set that up?
Oh, yeah, I think maybe. A few extra picks for the dailies.
Alphonse brings a bottle of champagne.
From the gentleman who just arrived, Mr. Bayer said to wish you bon voyage.
Another waiter sets out glasses. Joe straightens his suit jacket.
Oh, don't open it. Put it in the bag. We'll take it with us. Hey, Joey?
Yeah?
Get the coat.
Whoa, Jim. Jim. Jimmy.
As his fighter crosses the room, Joe gives May a reassuring gesture. At the bar, Bear stands and shakes Jim's hand.
Well, if it ain't Cinderella Man.
Thanks for the champagne, Mr. Bear. You're doing a great job publicizing that. If I never really appreciate it, I hope it's going to be that good. A successful night for both of us. You keep telling people you're gonna kill me in the ring. I got three kids at home. You know, you upset my family, particularly my wife.
Listen, Braddock. I'm asking you sincerely not to take this fight. Now, you seem like a decent fella. People admire you. I really don't want to hurt you. It's no joke, pal.
He cocks his head and nods.
People die in fairy tales all the time.
As the photographers crowd before them, Bear poses with his arm around Jim's shoulders.
Yeah, I think the smart thing would be for you to take a fall. Circus act's over, old man.
Right here.
I think I'll go over a few rounds with a dancing bear.
The press laughs as Jim shows his fist. Joe interrupts.
Very good. Okay. Come on. Okay. Hey, we'll see you in the ring. How about that, champ? Yeah? Come on. Let's go, Jim.
Thanks. My wife, May.
You gotta talk to him, May. You are far too pretty to be a widow. That's not nice, Max. Not nice. On second thought, maybe I can comfort you after he's gone.
Hey, I said shut your goddamn mouth, you punk!
As Jim holds Joe back, May throws a drink in Bear's face. She slams the glass down and stomps off.
Sorry. Send me the cleaner bill.
He turns away.
Get that, boys? Now he's got his wife doing his fighting for him.
Jaw tensed. Jim shifts on his feet. A smile crosses his face.
Yeah. Ain't she something?
Give me a drink.
As Jim nears the exit, his smile fades. Now, in the apartment, May cleans a skillet.
All right, three-punch combo, okay? Pop, pop, bang.
As Howard punches his father's fist, May watches them in a mirror above their sink.
Oh, that's good. One more time. Keep your thumbs tucked in. Keep your elbows in.
All right, that's enough now.
Oh, with some sting in that.
That's enough, please.
Yeah, that's good. Bang.
May scrapes the cast iron with a spatula.
I want your turn, Dad.
All right. Hey, where's the defense? Come on. Keep your hands
up. I want
your
turn.
May remembers dirt landing on Mike's coffin and Sarah grieving. She glares at the mirror.
Bang. Bang, bang. Bang, bang. Come on, Howie.
She envisions Sarah alone, then drops the skillet.
No boxing in the house. No boxing out of the house. All right? No boxing, period. You're going to stay in school, and then you're going to go to college, and you're going to have professions, because you're not going to have your skull smashed in, too. Do you understand me? Is that clear?
Staring fearfully, the children nod. May yanks off her apron and marches out. Jim leans to his children.
Let your boys go and get ready for bed, right?
Outside, May tops the staircase from their apartment, stepping into the light of a single overhead lamp. Jim closes the apartment door behind him and climbs the stairs. He turns May to face him. Light shines down on the couple standing close together in the pitch-black courtyard.
I used to pray for you to get hurt just enough so you couldn't fight anymore. And when they took your license away, even scared as I was, I went to the church and I thanked God for it. Because I always knew a day might come when it could kill you. I just knew it, Jimmy, and now it's here.
Hey, he just got the jitters, that's
all. He's killed two men, Jimmy. What's worth it? Huh? What's worth it?
I have to believe I got some kind of say over our lives. Okay? You know, that if things are bad, that we can change them, we can make things better for our family.
But I need you to be safe.
Nothing's
so
safe anymore, mate. And without that,
Jimmy, I need you to be safe. All right. I have stood by for all of it. Until now. Not for this, Jimmy. I just can't. So you train all you want. Make a show of it for yourself, for the papers. But you find a way out of that fight. Break your hand again if you have to.
Jim backs away from his wife, then leans against the stair railing with a downcast gaze. The overhead lamp highlights May's pained face as she swallows hard. Now, at the gym.
You all right?
Jim sits on the ring's edge with a towel draped over his head. At a railing above the ring, Jeanette frowns. Joe joins him.
So how's he going?
He's old. He's arthritic, and his ribs haven't been right since the Lasky fight.
That's a bad nose, sunshine.
A man whispers up to them.
Joe, the reporters are here.
Oh, Jesus.
Right, get rid of that goddamn rib protector.
Jimmy! Press is here, Boyle. Get bouncing around in that ring. Showtime, big smiles, you're the belle of the ball.
Bear don't need to know about no goddamn ribs.
Now, in the basement apartment, May hunches in the armchair with her hands folded. Words appear. Day of the fight, June 13th, 1935. Jim packs a book-sized kit into a leather bag on their kitchen table. He slowly looks to his wife, who stares off, hands clenched. Daylight filters into the room from a window well. She meets his gaze briefly, and he resumes packing. Later, Outside the rundown tenement, a man hurries to a railing overlooking the alley. Jim and his family walk to the curb. As the fighter reaches for a waiting taxi, his family stops. Other families watch from the sidewalk. Standing by the car's open door, Jim looks back at his wife. She watches him plainly from beneath a dainty black hat cocked stylishly on her head. His shoulders shift beneath his crisp blue suit as he takes a few steps toward her and kisses her pale cheek. As she closes her eyes, Jim regards his three children standing in a row. He smooths Rosie's hair and kisses her forehead. His daughter looks up at him seriously, and May takes a nervous breath. Jim kisses Howard's forehead. Stepping before Jay, Jim extends his hand. The young boy gives it a firm shake, and his father proudly pats his cheek. Howard extends his hand. Jim shakes it, arching his brow and smiling.
Bye, Dad.
His smile fades as he notices May staring at him. She presses her lips into a tight smile and nods slightly. Jim's lips part, and they share a long look between shallow breaths. Jim's jaw clenches shut, and he turns toward the car. May ushers her children away from the curb. Jim leans on the car's door as his family walks off. Another family and four women huddled in a doorway look on. Now, Jim jostles slightly in the taxi's back seat as it passes a sign advertising the fight. Arriving patrons wave to him. The men and women file toward the stadium, some dressed in suits, others in everyday clothes. Jim waves back. Elsewhere, a woman opens a door for May and her children.
Wow, look who's here.
Hi, Aunt Alice.
Come on in.
No radio, all right?
Yeah, sure.
All right, be back soon.
As May walks off, the children wander into their aunt's house. Howard eyes a boxy wooden radio as an older man waves to Rosie. Now, at the church, May makes the sign of the cross and pulls open the sanctuary door. She hesitates, then steps beside their priest.
Hello, May.
I came to pray for Jim.
He nods, then looks forward.
So did they. Yeah.
May turns her stunned gaze from the priest. Our view follows to the many pews filled with working-class families.
They all think that Jim's fighting for them.
As the priest smiles brightly, May stares thoughtfully across the church. Now, an overhead view shows people crowding through the stadium entryway. Words appear. Madison Square Garden Bowl, Long Island City, New York. Our view lifts over the rim of the stadium to the rows of sparsely filled seats surrounding the brightly lit boxing ring. The New York skyline looms in the distance. In the locker room, Jim drops some cash on his unzipped grooming kit, which includes a set of brushes. He sets down his wedding ring by his pocket watch. As he brushes off his hanging suit jacket, Joe lies on a bench nearby, tapping his fingers on his chest and whistling at the ceiling. Jim slides down his suspenders. He peels off his dress shirt and grabs a coat hanger. Joe briefly lifts his head off a bunch towel serving as a pillow, then relaxes again and gazes at the ceiling.
Hi.
Yeah?
Who bit that John Henry Lewis?
Jim saunters around the corner.
That Brad guy.
Correct.
Who want that Art Lasky punk?
James J. Braddock.
Correct again.
Now, refresh me on this one. Who was it that took that corn griffin and turned him inside out with no questions asked?
Who was that?
I used to think it was me, but now I'm kind of thinking it was you.
No, don't you sell yourself short.
At some stage, you think maybe I'll do some taping, maybe?
Jim sets a roll of tape in Joe's mouth. As Joe stands, Jim bounces on his toes. He sits on the empty bench, and Joe feels his outstretched hand.
All right. Let's see. How's that?
What?
May rounds a corner into the room. Both men look up and stare. As Jim goes to address his manager, Joe halts his open mouth with his palm. He pats Jim's cheek and shoulder, then walks out past May.
Excuse me, ma'am.
They share a smile, and Joe exits. On his feet, Jim leans on the wall.
Can't win without me behind you.
Jim shrugs his brow.
That's what I've been trying to tell you.
She nods, smiling broadly. Jim crosses to her, and she meets him halfway. She grips his shoulders and looks into his eyes.
Maybe I understand some about having the fight. So you just remember who you are. You're the Bulldog of Birkin and the pride of New Jersey. You're everybody's hope. And you're your kid's hero. And you are the champion of my heart, James J. Revick.
They share a tearful hug, and he kisses her cheek. They hold each other tightly. Jim pulls away.
You know, you better go home. You know, boxing's hanging around places like this, and you don't get tangled up in that kind of crowd. A nice girl like you.
Okay. I'll see you at home.
Her strained grin fades to a misty grimace as she pats his chest.
Please, Jimmy. I'll see you at home.
See you at home, baby.
Nodding. May cradles Jim's cheeks in her hands and kisses him. She gently strokes his face, then pulls back with a weak smile. As Jim's gaze lowers, she turns around and walks out. Now, filaments in a vacuum tube glow to life. In the church, the father tunes in a radio.
The biggest pugilistic event of the year, Max Bear versus the Cinderella Man. Jimmy Braddock.
At the bar, Jake and others clap.
And in a few moments, the contestants for tonight's championship bout will be making their way to the ring.
Reaching the aisle, Jim wears a silky blue robe. His name, printed across the back, arcs above a bulldog emblem. With Joe just behind him, the fighter passes two guards and looks around the packed arena. Seated fans crane for a look. A man points. Jim takes a deep breath. Jim eyes the staring crowd. With a nervous look, he glances back at Joe, then starts toward the ring.
Jim Braddock's rise from the soup lines to number one heavyweight contender has truly been miraculous. Now, never in all my years have I seen this arena so quiet.
A few cameras flash. Following his manager, Jim climbs the stairs to the ring. As Joe stretches the top rope high, he winks. Our view tilts and sidles under the rope into the ring, where a referee and several gentlemen wait. A tall, balding man removes his hat, and Jim nods. As Joe faces the crowd, his wife grins in a bright red hat and waves. The manager smiles at her. Jim jogs in place.
You can do it, Jimmy!
As the fighter raises a glove, his fans rise to their feet.
James J. Braddock, the Cinderella Man, who just a year ago was standing in a bread line.
Patrons listen outside.
But you wouldn't know it from the reaction of the crowd.
Now, inside her dark house, Alice heads down a hallway and opens a door. Standing on the basement stairs with the radio, Jay, Howard, and Rosie look up innocently at their aunt. The sportscaster holds his mic in the air. Now, Bear exits his locker room, escorted by two officers, his manager and his cornerman. The defending champion lingers in the hallway with an attentive expression, then presses forward.
We understand Max Bear has left his dressing room. There he is.
The people in the church listen closely.
Swagger of a Hollywood star. Tonight, though, there'll be no play acting, not with Jim Braddock in the ring. This fight is for real.
The table's been set. Let's get to the main course.
Max Baer versus James J. Braddock, Madison Square Garden Bowl, June 13th, 1935.
Gave you the rules in the dressing room.
1 minute to midnight,
oh, yeah?
Cinderella.
Class about ticked out, asshole.
Hey, you tell Laughing Boy here, no backhand.
I don't want any backhand and hitting and hitting
blows. You understand me? You tell this ball hunk no grabbing.
I got your goddamn language, you nasty little shit.
Look at this.
Listen, Rick, talk to me like that.
Talks. Holy mackerel, it talks. Look at that.
Keep your hands up at all times to protect yourself. Touch gloves, come out fighting. Go to your corner.
Good night, Max. Kick his neck balls up to the roof of his mouth. That ought to be a familiar taste for him, huh?
The men head to their corners. Smiling, Bear looks at the packed stands. Joe waves an arm over the rope. Now, Mr. Johnston takes a seat. As a timekeeper raises a mallet, Sporty looks toward Jim's corner.
You can do this. This guy is made for it. Have a picnic, all right?
As Bear glares fiercely at Jim, the timekeeper hits the bell. The fighters move to the center and shuffle around each other. Bear's face grows smug, and he winks at Jim.
The boys come out, and immediately Braddock shoots a left to Max's jaw.
As they move in tandem, beyond arm's length, Bear beckons Jim closer.
Take it right to him, Jimmy.
Jim hits Bear's chest. They clinch, and Bear goes for his jaw.
Snaps Braddock's head back with two right uppercuts. It's always a question of which Max will show up in the first round. The killer... for the clown!
Jim punches Bear in the face. As the champion fires back, Jim lands a right hook. Spectators get to their feet.
That's it. Doing well. It looks like he's enjoying himself. Mugging for the crowd.
Take it into it.
Both fighters manage hard-hitting face shots. At the bar, the men grin. Bear smiles and taunts with his glove. Jim socks Bear in the nose. As he swings again, his opponent rams his stomach.
Take it easy, pal. Let it go a couple of rounds.
Madcap Maxie is heavily favored to put the long snow on Braddock here in the first round. That big right hand of his has dynamite in it, especially when he traps his man on the ropes.
Gonna carry him for a couple of rounds.
As Bear fires with his left, Jim grabs the arm and beats the back of Bear's head.
Break it up! Break it up! Come on,
Jimmy! Fans stand and applaud.
Will not be bullied. Not tonight.
All right, when he does this horse shit, knock it off. He's trying to thumb you, all right? And then slip inside of there and shorten up the punches, right? Shorten them up. That's your turf. Inside is yours.
A needle on a timer ticks around.
Well, no one expected Braddock to go past the first round.
Shorten them up. Stay inside of
him. The experts at ringside were wrong again.
Shorten them up.
That's the bell. And here we are in the second round.
Jim punches Bear in the face.
Braddock lands a hard right to the head. That swats it away. Out of contempt. He appears to be toying with Braddock. There's no other word for it. Max struts around the ring without a care in the world.
As Jim jabs Bear flat on the nose, cameras flash.
Sharp, efficient, clipping, short. Go.
The reigning champ throws a few punches, but Jim bats them aside.
Knock that arm.
At the bar. Bear punches with his right as he holds Jim's head at arm's length with his left. Jim breaks the reach and lands six blows. Now, Bear sidesteps and jabs his fist into Jim's ribs.
Cover up, cover up!
Bear pounds his side repeatedly. The ref separates the fighters. With a huge grin, the champion heads to his corner. Jim returns a sporting smile, then turns away and grimaces. He sits down in his corner.
Got those ribs. Okay. All right. Take it easy. Take it easy. Just breathe. Deep breaths. Relax.
Good rhythm.
You're looking great out there, Jim. Yeah. You look great. Hey, Jim. Jim. If he goes for your body, drop the elbows on him. Teach him a lesson. Break his goddamn hand.
That round was tough to score. Braddock landed several surprising right hands. And those thunderous body punches by the champ should pay dividends in the later rounds. In the fifth, Bear's smile is gone.
Jim jabs, ducks a swing, and jabs again.
Jimmy comes over with a hard right. Then neatly slides out to Bear's left. Avoiding the counterpunch. Jimmy sticks a jab.
As the champ swings wildly, Jim easily dodges.
And now the crowd is jeering and even laughing at the champ. And Maxie's none too pleased.
Jim hammers Bear's ribs. As the ref intervenes, Bear backhands Jim.
Bear backhands Braddock across the face. That'll cost Maxie.
You lousy shavers! That
the Woody, Max.
Jim glares at his opponent.
I'm sorry.
Jim grabs him.
How's our wife here,
Frank!
Huh?
Frank!
The Irishman backs off, then rams a gloved fist into Bear's smiling face.
She talked about me.
I love the wrestling. Hey,
break it up. Let's pull her.
As the boxers face off, Bear hits below the waist.
Whoa, whoa.
Sporty and his peers balk.
Wake up, you wet son of a bitch!
As Jim keeps light on his feet, Bear scans the arena.
Max summons the clown. He's one of a kind, folks.
Say my name in her sleep.
Jim rushes his opponent.
Bear took a chinful of Braddock's head in that clinch.
That's it. Work his body.
As Bear gets Jim in a headlock, Jim blasts the champ's ribs.
She missed me?
Bear, ribs, Braddock's head in the headlock.
Hey, Maxilla, you're going to punch Jim apart, kid.
That's your job, asshole.
Jim wallops Bear twice. As Bear argues with Joe, Jim keeps slugging away. The fighters separate.
Keep your hands up and your mouth shut.
Oh, you gotta pay. You're watching the fight of the cute guy in the front row.
Take a seat, Max. Hey, he's nothing. Nobody. Guy has got nothing.
Jesus. Sit down.
Bear's manager sponges water on him.
Give me the sponge.
What are you doing?
Don't worry about it.
Well, quit screwing around.
Hey, relax.
Give me the goddamn water.
As Bear drinks, he sees men and women in the crowd eyeing him dubiously. The timekeeper slaps the mat.
10 seconds!
Bear stands and glares, his brow hard set over a vengeful gaze. In the opposite corner, Jim rolls his neck. The champ eyeballs Jim with a vacant, trance-like stare.
Hit this guy! Hit him! Hit him! Cut him down the side!
Bear's eyes grow sinister.
Oh, shit.
And the seven boys come out again. And Max is all business now.
The champ throws a massive right hook.
Put some more legs. Get
on high. There's more, Maxie. There's more. Slide it, Jimmy.
Braddock's starting to look at eight here as Bear pushes him around the ring.
Bear swings hard to the body. Braddock gets it away to the head.
Bear beats Jim's ribs, then Jim's right hook hits Bear's chin. Bear returns two jabs. Jim's view turns blurry. Bear jabs, then tags him with an uppercut. Jim dodges three hooks. As they clinch, Jim's glove shields his temple from Bear's relentless right hooks. Jim gets in two gut jabs, then blocks most of a combo. A third blow hits, but Jim shoulders Bear toward the ropes. Jim's right hand winds up. Bear's jaw takes the hit. His upper body torques. Sneering through blood, Jim thrusts his left three times into Bear's face. Bear manages weak body blows, but Jim goes for his chin. As Bear taunts, Jim walks away. Now a man wipes Jim's bloody lips. A corner man lifts a silver dollar from a bucket of ice.
That's nothing. That's a piece of cake. Keep your head up. Breathe through your mouth. Breathe.
He presses
breathe,
the coin to Jim's cracked ear.
All your ugly friends down from Jersey here, they're dressed up nice. They come to see you. You're putting them to sleep. You're not turning them anymore, Jimmy. Come on. Pick it up. Spit that out.
He lets bloody water dribble out his mouth.
Come on.
At Alice's, several ladies listen to the radio.
The boys go after each other immediately.
May arrives.
Braddock gets in the left of the body and a hard right.
May.
Jay looks to his siblings and Rosie frowns.
It's Caps.
May approaches.
Braddock stumbles away. Bear tries that right again.
Reaching the basement doorway, she eyes her huddled children, Braddock, then Alice.
Please, Mom.
Her children peer earnestly up at her. May leaves the gathering. At the fight, Jim gives, then takes a hit. Listening, May covers her mouth. At the fight, Bear pounds Jim's side. May shuts her eyes and presses her knuckles to her lips. Bear moves in, swinging wildly.
Neither man will back down. It's a bloodbath, folks. And there's the bell. shot here over 11 grueling rounds with the...
Dozens listen intently at the bar, the church, and Aunt Alice's.
Yet here he is, and he's held his own. But now we head into the championship rounds, folks.
As May stands alone, Joe faces Jim in his corner.
Hey, Jim, look at me. I swear to God, boy, win, lose, or draw.
Thanks, Joey. For all of it.
Son of a bitch.
All right?
Stop talking.
Get in there! And bury him!
Bear stands in his corner. As the boxers meet, Jim leads with body blows, then hammers Bear's head.
Here in the 12th, James Braddock is showing this crowd what Hart is all about.
Jim assails Bear with three jabs and a right hook, then ducks a punch. Bear pushes Jim's head to arm's length, but Jim punches his arm away.
Jimmy seems to be timing that left and has slapped it away several times.
As Jim's children listen, Bear slams Jim's ribs. Jim socks Bear's face.
Keep moving, boy! You stay with him! Son of a bitch!
Jim unleashes a flurry of punches. In the crowd, tough-looking men pump their fists. Jim pummels Bear's head, backing the giant across the ring.
Maxie's brother boy smile is now a bloody grimace. This crowd is desperately hoping for a Braddock victory. But Mr. Bear might have something to say about that.
As Jim sends a tremendous blow into Bear's chin, the champ reels dizzily against the ropes. As Bear recovers, he crouches and rams an uppercut into Jim's groin. As the ref waves an admonishing finger, Joe enters the ring.
Hey! Hey! Why don't you just take him in the balls?
As Joe storms at Bear, the ref, Jeanette, and a policeman stop him. Bear's manager pipes up. At Alice's, May frowns sadly. At the arena, a spectator shouts through his cupped hands. The ref, McAvoy, circles past Jim's corner.
Last round.
That's right, next chance.
Joe leans toward Jim's ear.
You won this one. It's a cinch. It is yours. But I want you to play a cagey now, all right? I know you don't like laying back, but I want you to stay away from his right. Do you understand me? Stay away.
Right hand.
In Bear's corner.
You're behind. Are you listening to me, huh? You want to lose the championship to this goddamn nobody?
In Jim's corner.
Hey, this is your night. Stay away.
Put him down. Put him down. Here's the right hand, right hand.
The cornermen insert each fighter's mouthpieces. Bear sways and huffs in his corner.
10 seconds!
As Jim stands, he leans over with his mitts propped on his knees. He lifts his gaze to Bear.
So last round, Jimmy. There ain't no more.
You play this bastard smart, and they can't take it from you.
In a grainy, blurred focus view from Jim's corner, Bear rubs his head and shakes his arms down. Jim loosens his ankles with a little footwork.
One more round to go, folks. McAvoy stands at center ring, waiting for the fighters to join him.
Ringside, the timekeeper raises his mallet. The fighters move to the center of the ring. Bear seethes, his head and shoulders hunched forward. Jim's thoughtful gaze, aimed toward the mat, lifts as he steadily nears his opponent. As the ref brings them together, he holds a hand between them.
Touch gloves.
Their leathery mitts come together.
The boys, touch gloves.
Bear throws a right and misses. Jim's punch connects.
Oh, no,
Jim evades a sweeping uppercut and left hook. Jim lands a jab on Bear's chin. Jim lands a right hook.
That ain't laying back.
Braddock's corner is
yelling at Braddock to stay away from Bear because Bear is looking for the knockout.
Stay off him, Jim. Come
in
on.
Church, the priest holds his dukes up. In the arena, Bear shoves a crouching Jim upright and wallops him. Jim punches Bear's already cut eye. Then both boxers trade head blows in rapid succession. Sporty gapes.
What is he, stupid?
Now Bear pounds at Jim's ribcage. As Jim ducks three wild haymakers, Bear stumbles against the ropes.
Hey, look at God,
Jim lands jab after jab, but Bear moves in and hits him with a severe uppercut.
That's the uppercut to stay the hell away from.
At Alice's, May joins the others near the radio.
A left to the body. Fair again with a right. Braddock covering up. Trying to hang on. Fair looking for the knockout. He doesn't want this one to go to the cards, folks.
They pound each other with lefts and rights. Braddock blocking with his knees and elbows. Snaps a big right to Maxie's jaw.
Jim delivers a left jab. As Bear swings, Jim ducks, and Bear grabs him in a headlock. Bear then holds Jim's face steady and slugs him hard.
Bear smashes him with a big right!
As May gapes, Jim staggers into the ropes. Joe and Mrs. Gould stare fretfully. Dozens of spectators stand, craning for a look.
Braddock is back on the ropes!
At Alice's, Jay looks to his mother. At Quincy's bar, Jake hangs his head. In the ring, Jim hunches forward. With a sidelong gaze, he squints toward Bear. As the defending champ closes in, Jim envisions a hazy, blanched view of Campbell crumbling under Bear's death blow. The fallen fighter's gaze drains of life. Back in the actual arena, Jim stays doubled over as he watches Bear cock his arm back. The gloved fist shoots toward his head. Jim ducks it, lands a left punch to Bear's midriff, and a hook across the big man's jaw. He attacks with rapid jabs. As Bear backs away, Jim stays on him. In the aisles, hordes of frantic spectators rush the ring. On the mat, Bear struggles to keep his mitts up, and Sporty grins in the press box. Bear pulls Jim into a clinch. The referee watches the exhausted boxers leaning on each other. Bear manages a weak body blow. The NBC sportscaster squints at the lull.
Both fighters are tired.
Jim breaks away, lands a few jabs, and backs off. Mustering his energy, Bear delivers three powerhouse hooks. Jim staggers but stays on his feet. With Bear's guard down, Jim pummels him with left and right hooks, followed by an uppercut. As flash bulbs go off, Bear reels, then resumes his stance. Facing Alice's radio, May folds her hands.
This is the finish! Both boys are tired! This is not boxing gloves! This is a bombing ballet!
As Bear tucks protectively, a punch from Jim blasts him out of it. Jim keeps his distance. As the clock needle ticks around, Bear throws a desperate punch. Jim ducks it and socks the champ. As the timekeeper lifts his mallet, Jim jabs Bear twice more.
It's over! This fight is over!
Joe climbs into the ring. The boxers touch gloves. At Alice's, May steps into a room by herself and cries. In the arena, Joe hugs Jim. Jeanette puts a towel around the fighter's neck.
Braddock came into this fight the biggest underdog in pugilistic history. For 15 rounds, he gave it everything he had against the younger, stronger champion.
Bear eyes the crowd glumly, his robe draped over his shoulders. In the Bulldog's corner, a giddy corner man unlaces Jim's gloves. Jim kisses the balding man's head and grins.
We are winning for the decision.
As May sobs, Alice comforts her. As the judges and McAvoy tally points, Sporty tugs at the ref's trouser leg.
Hey, McAvoy! McAvoy!
What?
Help me out, Hal. Help me out. How do you score the fight?
9-5, Woody.
Which way?
Have to read it in the paper, Sporty.
As the referee crosses toward the judges, Joe faces Jeanette.
The hell is this crap? Huh?
They watch the judges confer with the ref.
I'll tell you this much, they take this long to make a decision, they're going to decide to screw somebody.
A white mustache judge gestures adamantly.
They're going to rob this poor bastard.
Unbelievable bullshit.
Leering fans wave impatiently. Jake and the men at the bar stare dumbly toward the radio. In the ring, Bear looks around and Jim drinks water. As Alice stands by May, Jay, Howard, and Rosie stay by the radio.
The crowd on its feet for almost the entire fight is still standing, yelling for who they clearly believe to be the winner of this fight.
In the church, the priest paces.
We'll have to wait and see how the judges scored it.
Women pray over their rosaries. In the arena, a judge hands his ballot to a tall announcer who peruses it, then walks to the center of the ring. As the fighters and their corner men watch anxiously, a microphone lowers. The announcer removes his hat and lifts his face toward the mic.
Ladies and gentlemen,
we have your decision.
It's unanimous. Winner and the new world heavyweight champion, J.J. Braddock.
Joe jumps into Jim's arms. At Alice's, May shakes her hands and hugs her sister. Back in the arena, the crowd throws hats into the air. Outside, men and women dance in the streets. Joe kisses Jim's head.
You son of a bitch!
Jim Braddock has defeated Max Baer for the heavyweight championship of the world!
The priest grins skyward. In Alice's house, Rosie hops into her mother's arms while her brothers jump energetically on a bed. Jubilant men toast beer glasses at the bar. In the arena, Joe meets his wife ringside and kisses her. The referee lifts Jim's arm and the fans jump up. The new champion looks at the cheering spectators and grins. With bruises still fresh on his face, Baer converses with his manager, then approaches the winner. The fighters shake hands and exchange nods. As reporters surround both of them, Sporty remains seated. His lips curl into a tight smile and he nods. Now a large man lifts Jim into the air and turns him in a circle. The new champion raises his muscular arms high in front of his fans. Now, Max Baer's distant form strides up the aisle away from the ring. On the mat, Jim lowers his up-tilted head and smiles. His grin reveals the gap of his missing tooth. He turns and shakes hands with a gentleman in a suit. Our view rises above the filled ring and packed arena. As more climb in to join the champion, the view turns black and white and continues to lift higher and higher. The aerial image of the crowd freezes. Words appear. 2 years later, Jim Braddock put his title on the line against Joe Louis. Jim knocked him down in the first round, though Louis went on to win the bout. Joe Louis would always call Jim Braddock the most courageous man he ever fought. Now, in the basement apartment, May kisses Jim and Howard holds up his dad's title belt. The image turns black and white. Jim served honorably in World War II. Now the children watch baby turtles swim in a bowl. He later owned and operated heavy equipment on the same docks where he labored during the Great Depression. In the early 1960s, he helped build the Verrazano Bridge. Now, as their children dance, Jim holds May in his arms and gazes at her warmly. Their image freezes into black and white. Jim and May bought a house in New Jersey with the winnings from the bear fight. They raised their children in that house and lived there for the rest of their lives. The image fades to black. Credits. Directed by Ron Howard. Screenplay by Cliff Hollingsworth and Akiva Goldsman. Story by Cliff Hollingsworth. Produced by Brian Grazer, Ron Howard, Penny Marshall. Executive producer Todd Halliwell. Director of photography Salvatore Totino. Production designer Wynn Thomas. Edited by Mike Hill, ACE. Dan Hanley, ACE. Costume designer Daniel Orlandi. Music by Thomas Newman. Casting by Jane Jenkins, CSA. Janet Hershenson, CSA. Co-executive producer James Whitaker. Associate producers Luisa Velez, Kathleen McGill. A Brian Grazer production in association with Parkway Productions, a Ron Howard film. Russell Crowe is Jim Braddock. Renee Zellweger is May Braddock. Paul Giamatti is Joe Gould. Craig Bierko is Max Baer. Patty Considine as Mike Wilson. Bruce McGill as Jimmy Johnston. David Hubbend as Ford Bond. Connor Price as Jay Braddock. Arielle Waller as Rosemarie Braddock. Patrick Lewis as Howard Braddock. Rosemarie DeWitt as Sarah Wilson. Linda Cash as Lucille Gould. Nicholas Campbell as Sporty Lewis. Gene Pierce as Jake. Chuck Shimada as Father Rorick. Ron Canada as Joe Jeanette. Alicia Johnson as Alice. Troy Amos Ross as John Henry Lewis. Mark Simmons as Art Lasky. Art Binkowski as Corn Griffin. David Litzinger as Abe Feldman. Matthew G. Taylor as Primo Carnera. Rance Howard as announcer Al Fazin. James Ritz as official, Griffin Baer fight. Fulvio Cicere as referee McAvoy. Referees, Clint Howard, Jerry Ellison, Bill Mackey, Ray Marsh, Fernand Chrétien, Dave Dunbar. Ken James as Ansel Hoffman. Rufus Crawford as Lewis Coach. Angelo Dundee as Angelo the Cornerman. Lou Eisen and Wayne Gordon as Braddock Cornerman. Wayne Fleming and Nick Alakiotis as Bear's Cornerman. Christopher D. Amos and Nick Carusi as Lewis Cornerman. Lasky Cornerman. Keith Murphy. Everton McEwen. Johnny Calbane. Griffin Cornerman. David Georgeff. Wayne Bork. Paul Ryan. Feldman Cornerman, Sean Gilroy, Michael McNamara. Carnera Cornerman, Billy Wine, Richard Sutton, Michael Chin. Campbell Cornerman, Stuart Lunn, Richard Lewis, Peter Wiley. Tomas Kurzidlowski as Tuffy Griffith. Stuart Clark as Frankie Campbell. Nick Alakiotis and Julian Lewis as undercard boxers, Feldman. Eric Fink as announcer, Lasky. Sergio DiZio as young reporter. Reporters, Gavin Grazer, Boyd Banks, Daniel Cash, Judah Katz, Angelo Sarrukas, Robert Smith. 1928 fans, Craig Warnock, Aaron Abrams. 1935 fans, Duff McDonald, Andrew Stelmach, Chris Crum. Jerry Quigley as Quincy, Peter McNeil as Electric Man, Darren Brown as promoter. Dock workers, John Healy, Peter DiDiano, James Kirshner, Mike Langlois. Madalena Alexander as Angry Woman, Nola Augustuson as Relief Office Woman, Gino Marocco as Waiter, Mark Taylor as George, Sharon Matthews as Lady, Alex Stockwell as Churchman, Chick Roberts as Church Old Man, Isabella Fink as Church Girl, Bo Starr as Sam, Philip Craig as Radio Commentator, Hooverville Cops, Roman Podhora, R.D. Reed, Michael Dyson as Hooverville Man, Sam Malkin as Gibson, Tony Munch as Sam Penny, Conrad Bergschneider as Limo Driver, Richard Binsley as Announcer, Griffith, Flapper Girls, Ramona Pringle, Katrina Matthews Swain, Cooper Bracken and Jacob Bracken as Jay Braddock, 4 years, Alon Nashman as Deserting Father, Dominique Kuzukreya as Junket, Neil Foster as Security Guard, Brian Jagerski as Cop, Fight Promoters, Ray Kerr, Tim Edis, Dave Arkell as Mr. Mills, Deborah Sherman as Mother, Bear Hotel Hotties, Joanne Ritchie, Alex Cairns, George Duff as Man on Street, Boxing Choreographer Nick Powell, Boxing Stunt Coordinator Steve Luchescu, Boxing Trainers Brian Jagerski, Dean Kopkoff, Nick Alakiotis, Hector Roca, Wayne Gordon, Executive in Charge of Music for Universal Pictures, Kathy Nelson, Music Consultant George Budd, Music Editor Bill Bernstein, Assistant Music Editor Michael Zahner, Music Scoring Mixer Tommy Vicari, Orchestra Recorded by Armin Steiner, Recordists Tom Hardesty, Tim Lauber, Adam Michalak, Patrick Spain, Brian Dixon. Orchestration, Thomas Pisatieri, William Elliott. Digital Audio, Jesse Vocia. Music Contractor, Leslie Morris. Music Preparation, Julian Bratoliuboff. Temp Music Editor, Dan Lieberstein. Music recorded at The Village, Signet Sound Studios, Newman Scoring Stage, Sony Scoring Stage, mixed at Signet Sound Studios. Soundtrack on Decca UMG Soundtracks. Shimmy Shall Wobble, written by Spencer Williams, performed by Miff Mole and his Molars. Cheer Up, Smile, Nerds, written by Norman Anthony, Misha Portnoff, Wesley Portnoff, performed by Eddie Cantor with Phil Spitalny's music. Put That Sun Back in the Sky, written by Irving Cahal, Joseph Meyer, performed by Roanne's Pennsylvanians. Happy Birthday to You, written by Mildred J. Hill, Patty S. Hill. Tilly's Downtown Now, written by Lawrence Bud Freeman, performed by Bud Freeman and his Windy City Five. Someday, Sweetheart, written by John Spikes, Benjamin Spikes. Don't Be That Way, written by Benny Goodman, Mitchell Parrish, Edgar Sampson. Filmed in part at Toronto Film Studios. Filmed on location at the Ontario Heritage Center, Toronto, Ontario, Canada. Dempsey vs. Tunney by Gustav Rehberger. Copyright The Estate of Gustav Rehberger, 2004. Posters courtesy of Circus World. New York Daily News, LP, used with permission. American Humane Association monitored the animal action. No animal was harmed in the making of this film. Copyright 2005 Universal Studios and Miramax Film Corporation. All rights reserved. Animated Universal Studios logo, copyright 1997 Universal Studios. Country of first publication, United States of America. Universal Studios and Miramax Film Corporation are the authors of this motion picture for the purposes of the Berne Convention and all national laws giving effect thereto. While this picture is based upon a true story, some of the characters have been composited or invented, and a number of incidents fictionalized. This motion picture is protected under the laws of the United States and other countries. Unauthorized duplication, distribution, or exhibition may result in civil liability and criminal prosecution. This film has been described by the Media Access Group at WGBH with funding from Universal Pictures. Read by Leilani Jones Wilmore. For more information about motion picture access, visit our website at access.wgbh.org. This motion picture has been rated PG-13 by the Classification and Rating Administration.